The Place to Be podcast is now a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history for multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at the History of WWE.com or on Facebook by searching for the Place to Be podcast or the History of WWE, because the Place to Be is now the History of WWE.
Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room?
No.
The billiard?
Not billiards. It was. Come on, everybody. What? Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be. Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color, the Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
My thoughts cleaned up, pistol on my side. You don't want to hear that thing talk. Let the king talk, check the price and pay attention. Little Wayne, that's what they got to say, a mission. I'm like Nevada in the middle of the summer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you late on a Friday night, but we are still fired up nonetheless because it is time that we return to the Vintage Vault. And of course, I cannot do that without my PIC from Norwalk, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Happy Friday night to you, sir. Good evening to everyone in the PTB Nation. It is number 60 tonight. Episode number 60. You know, I think we started the whole number reference too late, so I think we'll just skip it. We should have done it like in episode 5.
We'll just go with your age.
Well, you know what? Considering what you and LaRue always say, I'll take that as a compliment. It usually means I'm about 12, so.
Your age in dog years.
Anyway, good evening, sir, and good evening, everyone. Episode number 60. It is a Friday night. This week, obviously, kind of herky-jerky with, if you live on the eastern side of the country, obviously the myriad of weather issues, including, of course, Hurricane Irene, which kind of tore through the Northeast in the Mid-Atlantic area.
Yeah, it's a week that I'm fine seeing coming to an end.
Yeah, I lucked out. You, a lot of our friends, in fact, a very good friend of mine that goes to my church and lives in town. She's now on her sixth day of no power, but she, on the other side, she left today for a week in Myrtle Beach, so she probably could care less. But lucky her. Hope they all have a good time tonight. Speaking of the Mid-Atlantic and the Carolinas, this is a very Carolina-centric podcast tonight because one of our main eventers in this tonight's delicacy cut his teeth in that part of the country. For tonight, we don't have the key. We'll remember that eventually.
Yeah, someday. We had it once. That's enough.
We had it once. Let me put in the combination here. For tonight, we do open up the big steel entity that is the Vintage Vault here once a week on the Place to Be podcast. And tonight, we're going to give you one of the greatest and maybe underrated shows of all time. And we're going to give it to you win, lose, or in some cases, draw.
The World Wrestling Federation proudly presents WrestleMania! The champion, Ric Flair, defends the title against the number one contender, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. The maniacal Sid Justice goes one-on-one with the immortal Hulk Hogan in what could prove to be Hulk Hogan's farewell match. It's a double main event. It's WrestleMania!
Welcome to Indianapolis, Indiana! Welcome to the Hoosier Dome! WrestleMania 8. Hello, everyone. I'm the Little Monster, along with Bobby the Brain Heenan.
I'm really going to miss the big Vince intros when they're done.
I'm also going to miss the awesome Gorilla opens, too.
Yes.
Because they end very soon as well. Of course, that is one of the more emotional opens in pay-per-view history, because as a kayfabe fan in the spring of 1992, you didn't know what the hell to expect on this show. For tonight, on the Place to Be's Vintage Vault, we bring you a show that I know my PIC's been looking forward to talking about.
Yes.
And that is WrestleMania 8.
And I love in that little intro video when he's talking about it being Hogan's last match, and the big, like, animated Hogan comes up over the picture, the Hoosier
over
Dome,
the, yes.
And flexes. It's pretty funny.
Yes. Well, I tell you, as a fan, it was actually, it was very, like I said, it was very emotional, very weird show, emotionally going in. And we'll explain why and the things behind it as we move along tonight. But, and for those that think this podcast is going to be short because it's the first WrestleMania that cuts the fluff, you've got another thing coming.
Oh, no, we've got a lot to talk about.
Got a lot to talk about, more than you think, and that's good. We got a lot to go over, and, of course, wonderful feedback from our awesome and loyal PTB Nation. We'll get to that later. April 5th, 1992. Final Four weekend. I believe the Final Four was in, I know that was the second of Duke's back-to-backs. I think it was in Minneapolis. I don't remember. They blew out the Fab Five. In the Fab Five's first of back-to-back. Sorry, Jordan Duncan. The first of back-to-back Fab Five losses.
Speaking of Jordan Duncan, you're going to have to visit our Facebook page because he called you out for your the teams of choice that you support.
You know, that was inevitable.
Yep.
We'll have to get to that. We'll have to get to that in a future headline show. Well, then I have no problems then talking about his crooked Fab Five in there, although I did love that team. They were pretty awesome.
Yes.
Any event, April 5th, 1992. From the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana. And they never went back there. Very weird. In fact, they don't go back to the state of Indiana for like 5 years. Very strange, or 4 years. Very
yeah,
weird.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to set up a Mania there in the Lucas Oil. But I guess, maybe community-wise, that's not really what they're looking for now for a Mania, a city.
Yeah.
Not really
it is
bustling economy.
Well, it is the home of college hoops. It's the college sports Hall of Fame's there. I don't know. It's a big place though. They have done it now in the new kind of big football stadium atmosphere. They had, of course, 23 at Ford Field, which is almost kind of the same building. But in any event, it is at the Hoosier Dome, and it was kind of neat because just like the Silver Dome 5 years earlier, we had the clear kind of.
Yes.
Baggy roof, so it was very, very bright.
Yep.
To start the show, which was kind of a cool look.
And now a couple of other little fun facts on this. This actually took place the day of the daylight savings time change, because I remember the arena was a little bit empty to start, and they actually say that there was a big traffic jam out front, and Bobby jokes that, oh man, they forgot to change their clocks. So kind of risky for them, unfortunately, to fall on this day where people, may have forgotten and didn't set the time. And, of course, this is when WrestleMania was in the afternoon. I think it was at 4.
Right.
And this is actually the first WrestleMania I watched live. So
I did not see this one live. I missed this one.
I think from here on out, I don't miss one until 15. I see everyone from here on out.
Let's see. No, I miss a few in between. Summer Slams I don't miss, but Manias, it all depended on what was going on. But I did miss. I watched this one. I think my brother bought the replay the following week, so I probably caught it like a week later. 62,167. So not obviously a good crowd. Slightly smaller than Sky Dome for 6. Slightly smaller, not by much. What, about 5,000, I guess? 5,
yeah, 000? Still big, though, because 92 really is considered now we're into the downtime business-wise.
Right.
We haven't really talked about the steroid trial stuff. I guess we can get into that. We'll save it for the end of the year, because that's when they really start to feel the change.
Yeah.
We'll talk about a Survivor Series. But
right.
This is when that was really starting to take place, and WWF was starting to struggle a little bit as far as attendance, and now
right.
We're into that swoon that we'll see for the next 3 years. So it's still a very good draw for them to bring in that many fans at this point.
Right. I agree. Buy rate, 2.3. Now, I know we weren't going to get into this, but I just want to say quickly that for those that may think 2.3 is not high for WrestleMania, and you think, well, WrestleMania 3 had like a 7, don't forget, we have a wider volume of pay-per-view viewers now.
Yeah,
so 2.3 in 1992 is pretty good.
Yes.
You know, so it's not like, there were less pay-per-view viewers in 1987, so 6.8 looked pretty juicy, but 2.3 here is roughly the same thing. So actually not a bad buy rate. Your announcers, of course, continuing the iconic Gorilla Monsoon, and I am getting a little emotional here because he is coming to the end of his announcing line. Mm-hmm. This will be the last one that he kind of does. Well, this is his last WrestleMania.
Yep.
Solo. Well, it's the last WrestleMania as the.
Yeah, it's the last pay-per-view for a little while. Yeah, he's back in Rumble 93, I think, is his return. Yeah. So.
But this is his last. This is his last WrestleMania as lead play-by-play announcer.
Yep.
So, very, very upsetting. Of course, his compadre Bobby the Brain Heenan. Celebrities, only a couple. Reba McEntire, one of the hottest country singers of the time, sang the national anthem. And yes, even my good friend, my PIC, JR, and his bromance with Ray Combs.
Yes. Love Ray Combs.
You're the only guy I know that has a secret bromance with a former Family Feud.
He was funny. He was a funny dude.
And you know why? He was one of those guys who made being uncomfortable around wrestling funny. Like, he didn't really know what was going on, but, it, you know, it was, he's like, whatever, screw it.
I even enjoyed him on Family Feud. I always thought he was funny, too. I thought he was a talented performer. I was kind of sad, you know, when he would go ahead and end his life later on in the 90s. But we see him a couple times here before that tragic event.
Right. We have one dark match.
Ugh.
And, it's a rematch from the... That's a rematch from the Rumble, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A rematch from the Royal Rumble, the Bushwhackers, and the Beverly Brothers again.
And really? I guess could
come up with a better dark match than that, really?
Yeah, I don't know. But I do want to talk quickly before we get started about the match that was supposed to happen on the show and got cut for time, and that is the British Bulldog against the Berserker. The Berserker was portrayed by John Nord. We'll see him on pay-per-view at some point. May not leave in 1993, but he was actually in a pretty good feud with The Undertaker over the summer, as we'll... Well, we won't see, I guess, because they never fight a pay-per-view, but he was an AWA star brought in. He was a Viking character managed by Mr. Fuji, and I was actually really looking forward to that match as a kid because I liked the Bulldog, and I was a huge Berserker fan, and right. I was really upset, and I think we see that in our comments later on as well.
Well, we've seen the Berserker lately. He was
What am I talking about?
Yeah, you're acting like we didn't see him. We saw him at the Survivor Series, and he's been around.
I don't think I still haven't recovered from this power outage. I'm like, my eternal clock is still all messed up.
You really were kind of cockeyed, I gotta admit. Seem like you were off in no man's land, so.
Yes, Berserker, obviously, we saw him in Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble. So,
but it would be great to see him at the show because he is the Berserker. And it kind of bummer to not have Bulldog on somewhere. Isn't that odd?
Yeah, this is weird. He almost goes into the swoon throughout 92 until he gets popped back up in the summer out of nowhere. But I've been watching these superstars throughout the summer of 92, and as we'll see from here through, I'm into mid-June, and he's still kind of just floating aimlessly. So
very weird.
Very odd. But yeah, it was sad to see that match get cut. And I remember actually... I actually wrote a letter to the WWF complaining that that match got left off and the fact that they had the main event, the title match, in the middle of the show. I wrote him a letter complaining about those two things, and I never got a response, but...
Okay. Hmm. All right.
Very upset about not having my
I'm sure they applauded your loyalties. Yes. And then they probably put it in the circular folder. Anyway. But anyway. We got, eight matches, I think?
Yep, eight matches.
Which is kind of pedestrian for WrestleMania, but like we mentioned in the open, we are now getting to the stretch where they start to kind of cut the fluff a bit and take some of the, you know, there's no more Dino Bravos and...
Yeah, well, part of that is that the roster was really thinning out. A lot of guys had been purged or leaving during this point, so, there aren't too many guys other than, like we talked to a Bulldog, left off this show that could have been squeezed on, honestly.
Right, right. But so pretty much the matches that are at this show, for the most part, are there for a reason. There's not much fluff here.
No, there's only a couple fluff matches, but even those have a purpose.
Yes. Including our first one, which really isn't a fluff match if you really were paying attention. And why don't you get us started?
All right. Our first match is the newly heel-turned Shawn Michaels taking on El Matador, Tito Santana, as we talked about Survivor Series. He went through his transformation, going from good old... happy white shorts Tito to the green pants bullfighting Tito.
Yes.
And, of course, the first funny line from Bobby comes early on when he thinks Tito and Reba McEntire are brother and sister because he thinks their names are Reba McEntire. So that always made me laugh.
Yes, that was good.
Of course, Shawn Michaels debuts his first pay-per-view debut of his iconic theme song, Sexy Boy, here.
Yes, of course. It is not the one you hear now, though.
No, it is the one with his manager, valet, Sensational Sherry singing.
Yes. So as obviously, I don't know if we mentioned this at the Rumble, but Sherry did kick Ted DiBiase to the curb or something. I don't know.
No, they split amicably. They talk about that because she fell in love with Sean and Ted let her go so she'd be happy. They actually did talk about it.
Did they really? I certainly don't remember that.
He let her go to be with Sean. So she is with Sean here, and they would remain together through the end of the year for the most part. And of course, she carries the big mirror, and Sean's really into the whole vain gimmick now. He's got the "I'm too sexy for this crowd" written on his jacket.
Yes.
He's got the song. He's got the preening and all that stuff. So
does he have the heart? I don't think he's got the hearts on his tights yet, though, does he? Is he officially the Heartbreak Kid yet, though?
I think he was Heartbreak Kid already. He had that pretty early on.
Yeah.
And of course,
but I don't think he's got a heart, so I think it's like white tights, and I think they're just like red stripes, or I don't think there's actually hearts on anything.
Yeah, I think
you
might be right.
Yeah, I don't think the hearts kick in really till 93.
And to this point, he had actually been using I'm trying to think of the classical song. You know the song they used to use like for the airline commercial, the Delta? Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
That was a song he was using on the house shows, and I don't know if he used it on TV, but I remember I saw a house show in January, and he was using that song, so it was kind of weird. But here he does have Sexy Boy, and he is making his pay-per-view singles debut. So, and unfortunately, as he makes his pay-per-view debut as a single star, Tito Santana makes his last. He will be in a couple dark matches from here until mid-93, but this is his final actual pay-per-view appearance in a singles match. He will be in the 93 Rumble as well. But we gave his final record here, and it's a very sad 3-19. He's 0-6 in the Rumbles, which he was in every single one from 88 through 93.
Yep.
1-7 at WrestleMania. He's been in every one. Yep. His only win coming at the inaugural WrestleMania against Executioner.
Yep.
0-2 at SummerSlam and 2-4 in Survivor Series. If you throw in his two dark matches, the record then goes to 4-20. And he picks up his second WrestleMania win a year from now in the dark match at WrestleMania 9. So his first and last Manias, he won his matches if you count the dark one. So.
Right.
Sad ending for Tito, and a guy that we really don't see again. We see him eventually in a commentary role as a Spanish announced team, but we don't ever really see him again as an on-screen character until his Hall of Fame induction, I guess. But
you know what? I'll take any of his 20 losses over a lot of guys' wins because the guy, Tito, always put on a good match. Always.
Yes, very memorable pay-per-view matches. Of course, especially all the stuff with Rick Martel at WrestleMania 5 into SummerSlam 89, all the Strikeforce stuff, and he had that one-year arc from 4 to 5. So he had a lot of memorable pay-per-view moments and very good matches. The match with the Barbarian, the six-man at SummerSlam 89, and, of course, the awesome slaughter by the Brainbusters. So there's a lot of good stuff from Tito.
Yes.
But it'll be sad to see him go.
Yes. Tito, probably one of the best and most popular superstars of the early days of WWE, even in the pre-pay-per-view era. Tito is one of those guys who was obviously more useful. And he was around for a long time. I mean, he was tag team champion in like 79.
He's been around for a long time. And he'll, like I said, he stays around for another little over a year on TV. It basically is a job out of the stars. But surprising, he's a guy who never really came back and had a run. He would have a run in ECW, right, in the early years?
He was when Snuka and Morocco and those guys would go there right about now. Well, it'll be soon after this, actually. They would start to go into Eastern Championship, but we'll obviously touch on ECW somewhere down the line. He would end up going to ECW, but he never wrestled in WCW. He would
in WCW, not till 2000. He comes in for a one shot Legends thing. He fights Jeff Jarrett on Nitro.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah. I don't remember that. I wasn't really watching WCW. I gave up on them in the 99.
All these facts I'm pulling out. I'm making up for my Berserker faux pas.
Yeah, really. I mean, and it's all stuff at times that no one else was watching. Nah, people were watching WCW in 2000, but not many, but somewhere.
All right, let's talk about this match now. Sean, a good solid 10-minute match to open up WrestleMania. And of course, this is one of those matches that was solely here to put Sean over strong, and who better than Tito on his way out as a major pay-per-view player, putting Sean over strong. And of course, they work it in. Sherry trips up. She's not involved. I think she gets a little involved on the floor, but Tito goes for like a superplex or a body slam from the apron inside, and Sean hooks the rope and falls on top of him. At this point, Sean didn't really have too much of a finisher. He was using the teardrop suplex and pile driver a little bit here and there, but he wouldn't use the super kick as a finisher for a couple years now. So at this point, he's using it as a transition move. So he kind of went without a real finisher for a while.
Right. No, I really do think Sean was, as much as he was comfortable with his character, I think his you know, it takes a while for you to get into work rate when you've really never worked alone. So obviously he was kind of getting his move sets down, and you know, he was a very well known and very athletic superstar, but mm-hmm. in terms of an actual move set, he was really still trying to kind of fit things in. So
right.
the comfy Sean, the Sean that we would all know, really wouldn't kick in for probably another 18 months or so, most likely.
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much. From here through late 93, he's way above average. Then he becomes excellent by 94.
Right, right.
And then he becomes phenomenal by 96. So that's
yeah,
his career
exactly.
trajectory.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, by 94, we know that we know what kind
he's
of guy
way,
he's
yeah.
turned out to be. But we'll get to that later. I always like this match. You know, it's not great. I think Tito does his best. It's entertaining. I think it's a good warm up for the crowd. Knowing that the fans are kind of late, this was probably a good match to put on here. It's nothing offensive,
yep.
but at the same time, nobody missed anything sexy or juicy. So, yeah, I think this was a good opener. Nothing great, but nothing terrible. You know, Sean gets the much needed win and kind of continues his rise. Let me ask you something though. Do you think really that? You think this was just, oh, Sean, do you think they knew that eventually he was going to be Sean? Or do you think this was just a, you know, another guy that he's got more face than Marty, and he'll be good for a couple years, and then he'll probably kick the, you know, he'll probably be out of here. Or do you
think they
had a feeling that there was something there with
yes,
him?
Yes, I think for sure. I don't know if they thought he'd be the legend he became, but I definitely think they had gold in one way or another. Is you know, at least a high-level upper mid-card heel player, IC title, world title, challenger level. I think they knew they had a guy. And at this point, they weren't really fully transitioning yet to the smaller guy. So I'm sure they didn't completely see him as a main event world champion, but I'm sure they knew they had something good with him.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you kind of knew the whole package was there. It just needed time to... And this was a good time for him to kind of sow his oats a bit when the product was a little, you know, leveled out.
Yes.
You know, he didn't have to have a lot of pressure on him. I mean, this is WrestleMania, but when you're in the opener, just don't stink out the joint. And he didn't do that. So a pretty, you know, legitimately decent opener. Nothing fantastic, but good enough to get the crowd going.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. There's our opener. Shawn Michaels wins his first solo WrestleMania match. First of what would become a myriad over a fantastic career. Before we get to the next match, though, this makes me feel good to know that I actually get to talk about this twice.
I've been watching you from afar for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man in me, and never has been. This is love, girl. This is more than a crush. Yeah.
It was all a metaphor. It's not often that I actually get a moment like this twice in one show, but out comes the, as much as it pains me to say it, former
what?
World Wrestling... Yes. Former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. Former.
Big happening. We'll get to why and how later, but they are former.
Yes. But we do have new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. We'll tell you who they are later on.
And they had been... LOD, since losing the titles in mid-February, had been off TV completely until the show.
Yes.
And they come out here for a surprise interview.
Yes, and it was very exciting for me to see them back on TV. And then, an even better moment for me is because back in the old days when they were far away, off yonder, when I would look at them in the distance, I'd realize that when they would come back, when they would come here, things would be a little incomplete. But now, they are complete. Because they bring the third member of the Trinity. And that, of course, would be their longtime manager, PPE, Precious Paul Ellering.
Yes, and he does the classic stuff where he talks about how they were a train without the conductor. They were going off the rails, but he's the conductor and he's back.
Yep.
And he was going to relead them to the promised land.
Yes. And, of course, obviously, Paul Ellering was our manager from the beginning. He was our manager in Georgia. He was our manager in... the AWA, Mid-Atlantic, He's been the guy that ran the Express that was the Road Warriors. Paul Ellering was actually a very good wrestler, but suffered a major knee injury in his career and was told he could never wrestle again. However, he was told, you know what, Paul, you've got the personality to be a great manager, and I've got two guys that could use just your abilities, and handed him these two big meatheads who would end up make beautiful music in the ring together.
Yes.
And speaking of them, they do actually wrestle on this night, but we'll get to them a little bit later.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. That's
why you're confusing me. You kept saying talk about them twice, but no, they do.
Yeah,
not.
You're right. I forgot that they weren't on. I forgot they weren't wrestling on the show. Yeah. Maybe I was just getting. There's a lot of confusion on this show. There's a lot of love going on. I need to be judicious in passing it out. So the LOD not on this show. They are in this. They're in this interview.
Right.
So and then the Berserker. But you know what? I think it's a 6-man tag with the Berserker.
In your heart, it is.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so the LOD gets their interview. They're back. Precious Paul is back, but their waists are empty,
mm-hmm.
and we will explain why later on.
Yes.
We go to our next match, JR. Why don't you clue us in on match number two, which actually huge things develop heading into this match. Huge. This is the first real meaty match of the show.
And now lot has changed again. Overall, in this whole show, we have a lot of changes, and this is a major one. The Undertaker, now a face. Taking on Jake the Snake Roberts, his former ally. This feud started on Saturday Night's Main Event, which was the first one to air on the Fox Network. And I think it was mid-91 was the last one on NBC. NBC decided they didn't want to pursue any more Saturday Night Main Events. So they hooked up with Fox for a pair of them in 92. This is the first. Jake had his match with Randy Savage. His blow-off to that red-hot feud kind of tapers off a little bit in February and ends with Savage beating him clean. As Savage was coming back through the curtain with Elizabeth, Jake was hiding back there with a chair. He was going to smash them. But before he could, Undertaker appeared from behind, grabbed the chair from Jake, and solidified the face turn that it seemed like the crowd had really been calling for since late 91.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt that the fans wanted to be behind the dead man. Pretty much after he won the title at the Survivor Series, I think people wanted to cheer for him.
Yep. So there it seemed like Taker was finally started to turn face, and of course it was solidified on the funeral parlor.
Just who in the hell do you think you are, and whose side are you on? You tell me, whose side are you on? Come on, tell me whose side you're on. Face to face, come on. Make up your mind, man. You make it up. Not yours.
Wait a minute.
Is this what makes you tick? Is this what you need in life? Is this your thought that you have to have, brother? There it is, man. Let me tell you something, though, big boy. I owe you one. Don't turn your back on me. I owe you one.
Oh, wait a minute. Look what he did.
You blocked it. What did
his
you
hand,
do?
His hand is caught at the end of that coffin.
What have you done?
Of course, Jake questioning Undertaker's alliance, says he's not with him. And then the great moment, he throws the urn in the casket. Taker goes to get it, and then he slams Taker's hand in, locks it, and then DDTs Paul Bearer. Good spot there. And then he smashes Taker with a chair a few times, and Taker just shrugs it off, and then actually starts to chase Jake and dragging the casket behind him, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
So a really good scene there, really hot scene. And it's funny because I remember actually being pretty upset that Taker turned face at the time because I thought he was like such a good heel and I thought they needed good heels and it was kind of surprising to me that they turned him. But the crowd is obviously calling for it and obviously in retrospect it was the right move. And Jake, after having such a great heel run, he kind of goes out a little soft here, but that was one last real piece of good heel work that he did before he did take off.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, behind the scenes, Jake was not in the best of minds. Jake's demons were starting to get to him. Obviously, he was taking a lot of painkillers. Obviously, he was drinking a lot.
Now, did he have money issues here too, though? Was that I'm trying to remember from the DVD why he left at this time. I know he was having issues behind the scenes, but I don't know if money.
No, I don't think it was money. He was making. I mean, he was making pretty good money with Vince. And don't forget, WCW
actually,
at the time.
I have the reason right here.
Oh.
The WrestleMania 8 match, and we'll get to this in a second, turns out to be Roberts' last for the WWF for 4 years. Roberts' departure came after he was upset with WWF chairman Vince McMahon did not offer him a position on the writing staff, despite
That's
being
right.
promised previously. After Pat Patterson stepped down from his post, Vince McMahon decided that out of respect for Patterson, the spot would be left vacant. Roberts felt like he was not only lied to, but also betrayed. So then he threatened to actually no-show WrestleMania if he was not given a release. So they ended up releasing him after the show. Obviously, they needed him for this show to face Taker. And, you know, we'll have to give Jake some credit. He, you know, he put Taker over strong at a time where he was pretty pissed off, and he really doesn't get too much offense in the 6 minutes. Taker pretty much squashes him. He buries his finisher because Jake DDTs him.
Twice.
Twice, and Taker kicks out of that, and then Taker hits the tombstone on the floor, rolls him in, and pins him. Actually, one of the worst tombstones. It's clear that Jake is like 2 feet off the floor. But.
Yeah, I know. I don't think the camera angle is meant to be that far back.
So while this is Jake's first singles WrestleMania match as a heel since WrestleMania 2, his debut, it's also his last for a while, as we said. After this, he was released, and he would bounce around a bit, but we'll get to him because he does make a return in 1996. So we'll talk about his time in between then. But, you know, it's kind of a sad ending for Jake because he had such a great run in late 91, and you're really starting to get into this heel character. And you wonder if there could have been a reuniting of a feud. I guess we'll get to it a little bit later, of a returning star. And it's just sad to see him go. He was so hot on the Savage feud coming off of that, and then this feud's a little more tepid, and then just to see him disappear right after the show was very disheartening.
Yes, and, you know, Jake really has nothing to say because I think if he was clean and he was legitimately, you know, he was legitimately focused and dedicated to the job, I think Vince would have given it to him.
I wish they gave him a shot, though, because I'm curious as to see what he could have produced in that. That summer 92, there's some good angles. Like I said, I've been watching those superstars, but a lot of it is kind of flat due to the lack of depth of talent.
Right.
It would have been curious to see what Jake came up with. Maybe it would have been a little bit of a darker year with him in charge of the book. So, yeah, you know, I kind of wish, I understand why maybe they didn't do it, but I kind of wish maybe they had.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you 100%, but I don't think Vince could, you know, they were in a very delicate time with the company and the product. I don't know if they wanted to trust any of the book to a guy who clearly did not have all his marbles. And if he was throwing him in a shot of Doers. So, and other things. So I think that's the reason why. So I don't blame Vince at all, but yeah, from a fan's perspective, I am curious to see what he would have done for those few months in 92 and really had nothing to lose. It's kind of a catch-22. On the one hand, the product was a little fragile in terms of the public perception of the product. But on the other hand, looking at it that way, maybe he should have had a chance to get out of it, to help him boost up. Maybe he would have found other characters to boost up, and maybe, you know, 92 into 93 would have been different, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is obviously the steroid stuff ends up really screwing up a lot of pushes, and a lot of guys end up getting dumped. Probably could have played a bigger role, and we'll get to a couple of them later. But the match itself, good psychology, good heel work from Jake, and of course, this really solidifies Taker's face turn. And from here, for a long time, he will be one of the top faces on the roster. So, decent match, 6 minutes, basically a squash. And of course, this is where Jake has those awesome tights with the naked woman with the snake wrapped around her.
Yes,
the white tights.
Yes, the white ones. Yeah.
So those are pretty cool.
Yes, very nice. So Taker now 2-0.
Yes,
keep track of that. 2-0 at WrestleMania, and a win over Jake the Snake Roberts. Our next match is probably, well, I want to say it's the one remembered because there's one later on that's pretty damn good.
Yes,
but this one may go down as. And I got a great question. I've been thinking about this all week as we've been preparing for this Vintage Vault tonight. I got a great question I want to ask you, and I kind of want to ask our nation. Because it's kind of been bouncing in my head, and I've been watching his matches the last couple days on his DVD, and it's kind of really kind of gotten to me. Our first title defense this evening pits the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, the Hot Rod, and no, not Kieran Polland, although I'm sure he wished he was. Of course, Rowdy Roddy Piper, taking on the former Intercontinental Champion, the guy who mysteriously lost it right before the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And that was, of course, Bret the Hitman Hart. And just as memorable as the match would be, and we'll talk about that in a moment, is the little jaw-jacking they do right before.
Romania first. As a matter of fact, this is the first time these two men are meeting for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title. Champion Rowdy Roddy Piper, his opponent, a former IC champion himself, number one contender, Bret the Hitman Hart.
You know,
gentlemen, we have arrived.
We have arrived. You know, I got to say, first of all, man, I got to tell you how much I love your family. I got to tell you how much I love your mom. I know you. I know this guy since he's been around me. I know a grasshopper. I know. I remember when they were changing your body pads. I remember even when, of course, you weren't potty trained until he was seven, but everybody's got their problems. I remember tying bows in our shoes when we were kids. And of course, your shoes were always tied together. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to me, because I remember when Mrs. Hart used to come down that. She used to make them sandwiches and show on that bologna. Of course, only one piece of bologna, but that don't matter. I'm hungry. Then she'd come up and she'd go to another.
What is this? Yourself. Oh, Kima, this is nice, huh? You know, I'm having a little fun trying to make you at ease, going to have a nice contest, keep it to yourself, have a nice contest, and here you want to be a hero all of a sudden, huh? You want to be a hot shot all of a sudden. You want your belt all of a sudden. Is that the idea, huh? Look, all I care about is one thing. I want to win back the Intercontinental belt. You got it. I'm going to take it. That's you keep your hands to yourself. Let me help you a little bit, buddy. We can still argue. Oh, yeah, you damn better we can. Stop lying to it here. We're not gonna have a million people watch me rip your head off. Would have had you. No, you wouldn't have.
Oh, but, thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
This should be a classic, ladies and gentlemen. Roddy Piper to beat on that.
So, there you have it. And, of course, the whole little crux there, friendly rivalry building up, was that they'd always kind of one would turn and the other one would say, oh, I would have had you there, I would have had you here. And here Bret says it, and then Piper turns and he has his leather belt wrapped around his fist inside the championship belt behind it between his stomach and the belt. So yeah, that was kind of the final salvo for this one. And, of course, the animosity built with each week.
Yes. And on paper, it's funny. You look at this and you go, I never really thought that I'd ever see these two guys wrestle. You know, it just looked weird, but in a good way. Because for once, it was nice to see Piper in a legitimate feud with a legitimate guy. All right, enough of this futzing around with fat guys like Adonis and him and Bad News with that god-awful five-minute whatever the frick that was in Toronto. It was nice to actually see Piper in a legitimate, you know, WrestleMania or big pay-per-view arc. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It just was legit final. And this is not a knock on Piper by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he's just never really put in that spot.
Right. And Bret was definitely feeling it now, you know? And after this match, he obviously will officially become the guy that we all know for the rest of his career.
Yes.
But the match itself probably one of the two or three best Intercontinental title matches of all time, and definitely one of the five or six best WrestleMania matches of all time. Which begs this question, my friend. And this is the question I want to ask you all week, prepping for this podcast. And I offer this question as well to our wonderful PTB Nation. And I'm curious to hear your comments on this. So please post it on our Facebook page. We talk about guys' styles. You know, this guy's a brawler. This guy's a high flyer. This guy's a technician. This guy's a catch-as-catch-can. This guy does this. Can anybody really pin down what exactly is Roddy Piper's style? Seriously, what would you categorize his wrestling style? Because if you think about it, leading up to this match, we never could really pinpoint it. Because he's wrestled a bunch of flunkies, guys who, you know, are maybe had good personalities and good characters, and him and Piper would have great jaw-jacking promos, like Bad News Brown, like Flair. But then you never really could pin down. And the one feud, and I just mentioned that we could have seen it, we never did. And that was with Flair.
Right.
So the question is, what is or what was Roddy Piper's style? Was he a technician? Was he a brawler? Is he a hybrid? If you go back in time, what style is the Hot Rod? And I think this match answers that question finally.
I'd say he's like 85% brawler, 15% wrestler. I think he's one of those guys where he could wrestle. He just never really had to until here. But he definitely shows he could do it. And that was very cool to see that, you know, you didn't know what to expect coming into this match. And the fact that he hung with Brett for 14 minutes and really went move for move with him and kept the crowd on their feet split was really just something cool to see. Because this is pretty much Piper's swan song of his first, I mean, I guess it's technically a second WWF run, but he didn't go anywhere in between. So I kind of count this as all as one run.
Right.
He wouldn't really be on TV again until 1994 from here. So this really is a big transition show. A lot of guys disappear. Not guys that leave permanently. A lot of guys would return. But this is it for Piper for a while. So it was just cool to see him in this kind of role.
Yeah. And I think this is a great opponent for Brett to have as well. For many reasons. Number one, because it's an experienced guy. And this is not a knock on Perfect at SummerSlam, but let's be honest. He wrestled 70% of Perfect, not 100% of Perfect. And that's not Perfect's fault either. He will eventually wrestle 100% Perfect in a brief time, but this is really the first, as a singles wrestler, and this is not a knock on Steve Kern, cut me some slack, but seriously, this is the first legit bona fide guy that Brett has really faced in a big match situation. And
oh yeah, no doubt.
And legitimately, he succeeds with flying colors. Both guys really put on a great match. I literally just watched this match last night.
Yeah, the
again,
perfect
I watched
match,
on Piper's DVD.
The perfect match was his breakout at SummerSlam 91. This is what solidified him as a player. This was, all right, this guy can go no matter what. And this guy could put on a big time major pay-per-view contest. And he did it. And this match is awesome. It's 14 minutes of nonstop action. They have the crowd of them in their hands. They're both faces, but they both wrestle a little heelish, with Piper doing more of the heel stuff. But and Brett kind of playing the underdog through most of it. Of course, you have the great part where Piper holds up the bell and he's thinking about if he should hit Brett with it. And Bobby has the great line, "Hell, what the hell, use the bell, or hell, give it to me, I'll hit him for you." You know, a lot of cool stuff there. And of course, we must talk about the nasty five-alarm blade job that Brett does. He has this gushing blood everywhere. And this is a time when Vince had actually outlawed blading. Like we said, they were under a lot of media scrutiny with the steroids, and they were trying to get away from some of that stuff. And blading was very, very out right now at this point. And Brett, I think, ended up getting off the hook because he was able to convince them that it was hard way. Another guy later on would not be so lucky and did get in trouble. But Brett was able to get away with it. I think he said he did it when he hit the post or hit the guardrail or something like that.
Yeah, he did hit the guardrail. He definitely, I mean, if
no,
he didn't do it hard
no,
way.
He bladed for sure. But
well, you know what? He did a hell of a job of hiding it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he says in his book that he bladed and then he lied and got out of it. So,
And it was Brett, and he was on the upswing, so he was able to.
Yes.
See, Brett, you used your stroke. Har, har, har. No, just kidding.
And then, of course, Piper gets his sleeper, which was his finisher. Brett kicks off the top rope, rolls over him, and gets the win.
An ending we would see 4 years later.
Yes.
I wonder against who. Well, we'll get there. So, for the second time in his career, Brett the Hitman Hart is your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. So congratulations to the Hitman and congrats to the Hot Rod, because legitimately I think a lot of young, and I think you're one of them, I think you were one of them at the time, JR, guys who went, wow, Roddy Piper's actually a good wrestler. Come on, honestly, after you watched that, you thought that, didn't you?
Yeah, because definitely. Yeah, I didn't expect that, that's for sure.
Yeah, because, and it's, again, and I'm not knocking, I know Matt Rotella, who's the biggest Piper fan I know, I'm not knocking Piper. I've never said he was a bad wrestler. My point is leading up to this match, Piper never had a really good work rate opponent in a big show. The one chance we could have had, we didn't get, and that was when he fought Flair at Tuesday in Texas, and we never saw it. other than that, and yes, the older fans, obviously, and you can't even, I know most older fans will probably say, what about the dog collar match with Valentine at Starrcade 83? You can't even really use that match because A, it was a stip. Actually, that's probably the only reason. The dog collar match kind of hides what kind of wrestler Piper was. And, you know, they were selling the whole ear injury, and we're not going to get into that now. But my point is that's not even a good template to describe the kind of wrestler or what you would categorize Piper as. This match does it. I agree with you. I think it's even more in the middle than you think. I'll say it's more like...
He just never showed it, though, really.
Yeah, 65-35. Brawler.
I don't know.
Brawler.
I feel like he never showed that, so I don't think we can give him that high.
All right, well... I would definitely get his DVD if you don't have it. It's tremendous. It was a great story, and I've been watching the matches. I kind of rotate them when I fall asleep because I need to have Gorilla in my head when I nod off. And I was watching. I had that match on the other night, so I watched it again, and it's absolutely tremendous. It's on obviously the WrestleMania 8 DVD that's on the anthology. It's on Piper's DVD. Is it on Brett's? Good question.
It may be.
Let's see. Let me check very quickly. Let me see if it's on Brett's DVD. Let's see. Check historyofwwe.com, our good friend Graham Cawthon. The answer is... No, it's not on here.
Okay.
Surprised.
Yeah, I thought... I mean, he definitely considers that one of his best matches. I know that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I am surprised. I am. It is on Piper's, though.
Okay.
It is on Piper's DVD. As is his win over Mountie at the Rumble. Is on there too. So congrats to the Hitman and congrats to the Hot Rod. Both of them put on a great match.
And if you have never seen this match, which I hope you have, but if you haven't, go watch it.
Yeah, it's very, very good. You will be pleasantly surprised at Hot Rod at the Hitman, which shouldn't surprise you because we all know how good he is in the ring, but you will definitely, if you've never seen it, be very surprised, pleased at how great Piper can be in a match with another technician. So we can't gush on that one enough. Top of the line. Definitely one of the top 10 WrestleMania matches of all time. And probably a match that I don't think a lot of people would think of in their rankings. I think they think a lot of main events, particularly the fact we're at 27 WrestleManias now. Sometimes a lot of matches from like the first 12 sometimes get forgotten. Mm-hmm. That might be one of them. So there you go. Great match, maybe the highlight of the show, but we do have some show. We do have a lot of show left to discuss.
Yep, and of course, coming out of that, we have another big-time debut and another interview segment. But before we get to that debut, we need to give you a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. In 1990, there were rumors that Vince McMahon was creating a bodybuilding organization. He would deny that, saying he was only starting a magazine called Bodybuilding Lifestyles. The magazine secured him a booth at the IFBB Mr. Olympia contest in September 15th, 1990. Mm-hmm. At the conclusion of the competition, the booth handed out press releases announcing the formation of the World Bodybuilding Federation. Mm-hmm. They claimed they would revamp professional bodybuilding with dramatic new events and the richest prize money in the history of the sport. In 1991, on January 30th, Vince McMahon announced the company's unveiling in New York's Plaza Hotel, and they had signed 13 top competitors, many who are IFBB regulars, to long-term contracts. Aaron Baker, Mike Christian, Vince Cumberford, David Dirth, Barry DeMay, of course we would hear a lot about him on TV, Johnny mm-hmm. Morant, Danny Padilla, Tony Pearson, Jim Quinn, Mike Quinn, Eddie Robinson, Gary Strydom, another guy we'd hear a ton about, Troy Zuccolato. They were dubbed the WBF Body Stars. The first competition was June 15th, 1991, a live pay-per-view from Atlantic City. Regis Philbin was brought back into co-host along with McMahon and Bobby Heenan. There was mixed reviews. Critics noted that the WBF's attempt at developing characters for each body star went against Vince's initial promise to keep professional wrestling out of bodybuilding. And of course, they would have the iconic Body Stars versus WBF Superstars Family Feud episode in 91 as well. Now, he was having a lot of issues with Lou Ferrigno, who was a legendary member of the bodybuilding community, of course.
Yes.
And Ferrigno had said he was going to he wouldn't re-sign or rehire anyone who signed with Vince. He was all pissed off. But they ended up actually making a deal in early 92. I think Vince realized they both realized they needed each other. So he brought in Ferrigno as a competitor, billed him as the legend, and he was a contender for Gary Strydom's championship. As the appearance date approached, McMahon and Ferrigno couldn't reach a final agreement, and the appearance was scrapped. So, things were starting to fall apart already at this point, and things would fall apart even more. But let's first talk about the debut that we witnessed here. Of course, Bobby Heenan keeps announcing that he has a major announcement, and he would bring in via his home the debuting Lex Luger. Comes to us via satellite. Of course, Lex Luger was a WCW megastar, started in Florida. Oh, you know, we'll wait to give his whole bio, so his in-ring debut. But
right,
he was signed to a, he left WCW in February 92 after he lost the world title to Sting, and they yep. signed him instead of coming in to be a wrestler. And I don't know if he might have had a no compete clause, and that's why they
he definitely had a no compete.
Okay, so that's why they had to do this. They brought him in to be a WBF competitor.
Because if he didn't have a no compete, they'd have brought him in immediately.
Yes.
I don't think they would have stalled it.
You're right.
Yeah. Actually, and the match you're mentioning that you referred to, I actually watched recently, and we're going to get to it on our written NWA WCW reviews. Super Brawl.
Two.
Yeah, that's right. The first one was 91. Super Brawl 2, he loses to Sting.
Yes.
And it's actually not a bad match.
No, it's pretty good, even though Luger at that point was kind of checked out mentally.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And I think he was pissed that because Flair had no faith in him in 91. We'll get into all this when he debuts. There's a lot of back stuff with Luger, more than people think.
Yeah, so of course he was really jacked. And in that little clip, he takes his sweatshirt off and poses a little bit. And he has a woman in a bathing suit or some shit come and give a glass of milk, and he drinks the milk. And, you know, Bobby's putting him over big time. And, of course, they would have an association from here until he debuts as a wrestler, which will happen early 93. So, you know, it looked like maybe they had their next WBF megastar. And, of course, Luger was set to perform at the June 13th, 1992 competition, the second one that they were going to have on pay-per-view from Long Beach, California. I don't think he was actually going to be involved in the competition. I think he was going to be a guest performer. They actually were talking about it on the Superstars I was watching. Vince talked nonstop about it once you get to May. It was like the health and fitness expo combined with this thing he was putting on. Unfortunately, right before the event, Luger was in a major motorcycle accident and he had to drop out. Instead, he was interviewed via satellite during the broadcast. And of course, that would lead to the infamous metal plate being in Luger's forearm that we'll get to.
Yes.
Yep. On July 15th, 1992, Vince called the owners of the IFBB and announced that the WBF was officially disbanding due to a very bad situation. So that's it. There were two championships. Gary Stridham won them both. And actually, both of them were released on Coliseum Video. So check that out.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
And of course, also we should mention the weekly TV show they had, WBF Body Stars. Aired weekends on 1992 in the USA Network. Matt Lauer was actually supposed to be the original host, but he never appeared. Instead, it was co-hosted by Vince McMahon, Cameo Newer, and Lex Luger. I don't know if you remember Cameo at all. She kind of looked like Medusa a little bit.
They
would just do various little tips and clips like that stuff. So, and of course, the program changed title just to Body Stars in late 92 after WBF disbanded. And then the program is primarily used to promote IcoPro, which was Vince McMahon's bodybuilding supplement line. And it wouldn't last much longer than that. So there you go. That's the backstory. I feel like not anyone ever really talks about the WBF, so I thought we should get into a little bit. That would be kind of
cool. No, I think it's good. I think it's, you know, because the logo was always on the periphery, and that Gary Stridham guy they talked about. I mean, you thought he was the friggin' World Wrestling Federation champion the way that they pimped the shit out of him on Superstars, and it was just insane. But but obviously a lot of people thought the WBF was made to kind of work around Luger, but obviously that story proves that wrong because he was talking about this in 1990, well before Luger and Vince were even talking, obviously. So,
yep.
But there's your story, and we'll get more into Luger, when we get to the start of the new year. He comes out there, and there was definitely a no compete there because Vince would have brought him in immediately.
It would have been obviously before he got hurt, so maybe it would have avoided possibly the motorcycle accident as well.
Yeah, so bummer there, and that that instance. But obviously, it would lead to a pretty good storyline down the line and his eventual debut. So, Flexi Lexi is on his way, and then you're really starting to see the changes in the WWF now. You never thought that any of these guys would ever actually come in. You know, you would think they were, you know, NWA, WCW mainstays, but now you're seeing the winds of change kind of blowing, but they really do blow by the end of the year.
His Wikipedia page doesn't mention anything about no compete, but it had to be something. I mean, unless Vince really just was trying to bring in a major name for WBF to try and save it, which is possible. I mean, maybe Luger they figured eventually he would sign a contract to wrestle, but for now they wanted to use him to prop that up. I mean, it's entirely possible.
Yeah. But I think I mean, you knew that he was eventually going to be a wrestler at some point. So, all right. Speaking of things that blow, let's move on to our next match.
What? This is Ray Combs.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I would rather have had him wrestle than the guys that are in this.
No, it's a good match. I always like this array of talent, but I'll let you ahead and read them all.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. We'll start with the heels. As usual, a great team. The Mountie.
The Mountie. We've
got a lot of formers here. A lot of former belt holders on this team.
Yep.
We have the Mountie, former Intercontinental Champion. We have Nabs. I almost said Nabs and Sogs. This week does need to end. Nobs and Sags, the former tag team champions, the Nasty Boys. And, of course, the Repo Man, who was a former tag team champion in his previous life. So, a lot of former gold on that team. The babyface team, though, the Big Boss Man, still red hot even 92, still hot with the fans.
Yeah, he was, but he was kind of rudderless at this point.
Yeah, there was a lot of rudderless stuff going on.
Yeah, this whole match is 8 rudderless guys, pretty much.
Virgil, former $1 million champion. Sergeant Slaughter, former World Wrestling Federation champion. You know what? It's upsetting because I got the American flag. Oh, you're debuting new parts of the song tonight. Yeah, what does best? Give me 1.5-star matches. It's unfortunate because if Bossman wasn't in this match, if you put anybody else in this match, even Texas Tornado as the baby, I would have taken that because then Duggan would have been the only guy in this whole match that had never had any gold.
I think Tornado was still sitting in his limo in West Warwick, Rhode Island, waiting to come out for an appearance.
Probably, but you know what? Even it would have been great if he was even in this match because then Duggan would have been the only guy in this 8-man tag that never had any gold. And that would have taken pleasure. Anyway, the goofy schmuck and his three minions, Sergeant Slaughter, Virgil, and the Boss Man, take on the Mountie, the Nasty Boys, and Repo Man.
Now, this is, of course, the Ray Combs special. He comes out and does the ring introductions. He does all the funny stuff.
Yes.
Making fun of. He basically does Garvin's shtick from SummerSlam 89, only a lot better. I couldn't find a clip of it, but it's corny humor, but I always thought it was funny. I liked Ray Combs. I thought his delivery was good. He does the whole, Family Feud style survey says kind of things and makes fun of all the heels. So I thought it was pretty good. And the, pre-match promo with Mountie, Nasties, and Repo Man is actually pretty funny as well. So of course those are all, Repo Man wasn't a Jimmy Hart guy, but he basically was. And they show clips of, they had like a WrestleMania weekend events like they always did, and they had like a concert in the park, and the Nasties and Jimmy Hart and Mountie like all sang a big song. I forget what they sang, but I think it's on the WrestleMania 8 Coliseum video. They had clips of it. I don't know. I always like this match just for Ray Combs alone, and actually I thought it was pretty entertaining. I mean, it's only 5 minutes, and it's not really any, they don't do any nonstop action, and they have that cool spot where all four of the faces hold hands and clothesline three of the heels, which I always thought was kind of cool. And of course, Virgil uses Jimmy Hart's helmet, hits Nobs, and gets the win. So I don't know. Whatever. It's a harmless old school WrestleMania filler.
Right. And for.
I got the American flag over my shoulder.
What you should have is a little stick with a. You should have a stick with a little bag. Clock is ticking. Clock is ticking. Incidentally, this is. Speaking of USA, this is Sergeant Slaughter's last pay-per-view match for 5.5 years.
He actually sticks around a little bit longer at 92 than I realized, too. It's throughout the summer he wrestles, and then he becomes the special. He's like the head referee, but he doesn't actually referee, but he's like in charge of the officials, and then he disappears by the end of 92.
Yeah. I don't know where he goes, actually. I don't think he goes to WCW for any reason.
No, definitely not. But did he work backstage, or not until he came back in 97 does he work backstage?
Maybe he did hang around backstage. We'll have to check his wiki page.
I'm going to check it right now.
Hmm. On a side note, while he's doing that, I just want to go off topic for a minute.
Doesn't say. Just says he took a hiatus.
Okay. Speaking of huge wins, on a side note, I do want to congratulate the Baylor football team for an unbelievable win tonight. Down in Waco against ranked TCU. That's a watershed. That's a franchise, a program changing win.
Yeah, I watched the whole second half. It was a sick game.
Yeah, congratulations to Robert Griffin III. Ugh, wish Baylor would have run him over too. But congratulations to the Baylor Bears. Big win tonight, 50-48. They beat TCU. So first regular season loss for TCU. The only person I know that can make a 3-minute song last 12 minutes. Like the Inagata DeVita of wrestling themes.
It'll never end.
Yes, it will. Next June, damn it.
No, you think it's going to end, but don't worry. I already got something cooking in the hopper.
Oh, good God.
The teal hopper.
You and I wish you could go down the Duke the Dumpster, too. Anyway, our next match. Now, let's get out of the crap and the floating muck, and let's get down to some real business. Because our first of the double main event that was pimped for this WrestleMania is right now. Boys, there are a lot of crap we're going to get into right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. Our second championship match is actually for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. And for the first time at WrestleMania, the World Wrestling Federation title is not going on last.
Well, WrestleMania 1.
Not kind of the first one. Yeah. Nothing ever counts with the first one.
Okay.
So, obviously. But yeah, that doesn't count because the champion wasn't in a match.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't a title match. So, for the first time in WrestleMania's involving a world championship match,
yep.
It is not last. And Justin and I will banter about that later, and I'm curious to hear, of course, our wonderful PTB Nation's feedback about that too, because I'm sure they mention it. Your World Wrestling Federation champion,
for so long, you and me been finding each other for so long.
Your World Wrestling Federation champion, Ben H. It's your boy, Ric Flair. Of course, winning it at the Royal Rumble. Defends the title against the immortal... What? What do you mean? I thought that's what they've been... What? Isn't that what we've been talking about for like 8 months?
Well, you think so. I thought so.
Didn't we all think that? Well, certainly that match would not have been in the middle. But alas, the match that a month for my guy... didn't happen. We'll get more into that when we get to the end of the show. Instead, Ric Flair's opponent is the number one contender and a guy who has done a 180 from a year earlier. And boy, has he had he's probably had one of the most emotionally roller coaster driven years, storyline wise, mm-hmm. in the history of the World Wrestling Federation. And that is, of course, God rest his soul, the great Macho Man Randy Savage.
And of course,
a year ago was down in the dumps, almost died of a snake bite, watched his wife get smacked, and all of a sudden he's a number one contender for the world title.
And this whole thing, of course, started back in February mm-hmm. when Jack Tunney held a press conference to name the number one contender, including five candidates that he saw fit to be involved in this decision. Mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan, Sid Justice, Undertaker, Roddy Piper, and Randy Savage.
How many worthy challengers anxiously awaiting a shot at Ric Flair's World Wrestling Federation title? Choosing an opponent has been especially difficult. At this table up here are five of the challengers. Roddy Piper, The Undertaker, on my left, Sid Justice, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah, right. I like it.
And Hulk Hogan. Very hard to choose one. However, after careful consideration, as well as examining the wishes of the public at large, I have reached a decision. Ladies and gentlemen, esteemed members of the press, challenging Ric Flair for the World Wrestling Federation title at the Hoosier Dome at WrestleMania 8 will be Hulk Hogan!
Yes!
Now you may be asking yourself, what the hell? Hulk Hogan was picked? And of course, the tease there is to justice started to stand before Hulk Hogan's name was announced, but we'll get to that later.
Yep.
There would be some happenings since that press conference over the next couple weeks, causing Hulk Hogan to drop out of the title match. What can make him drop out of a title match at WrestleMania?
Exactly.
What could happen? We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So we needed a new contender. And Jack Tunney announced that Randy Savage was his second choice to receive this title match. So now with the match set, the shenanigans began. Ric Flair started claiming that he had been having a intimate relationship with Elizabeth prior to her meeting Macho Man Randy Savage. Of course, anything involving Elizabeth at this point sent Savage way over the deep end.
Yeah, pretty much.
He was not very happy with these claims. And Flair even started to produce photos of him and Liz together each week. And they were in the magazine. They were at a pool. They were having dinner, you know, on a couch drinking wine. All different pictures of the two of them.
Trollop.
So, interesting stuff there. And, of course, you wondered exactly if this was true or what the deal was. And Flair promised that at WrestleMania, he would have the best picture of all, a centerfold of Liz that they would air on the big screen if they won the match.
Yep. I have a dispute with this whole thing, though.
Okay, what do you
know, everyone said that the pictures, remember the picture of the two of them standing next to the horse?
Yes.
And then there's a picture of them with the feeding the strawberry at the pool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here to let you all know right now that the superimposed cutout in those pictures was not Flair over Savage. It was Elizabeth over me, damn it. That was my horse.
All right, we have the new Photoshop challenge. Jason Greenhouse and everyone else, get on it. We need a picture of Ric Flair, Scott Criscolo, and a horse. If you need pictures of Scott, let me know, and I can friend you on Facebook, and I have plenty of them that you can choose from. So you let me know if the ones you find online Google aren't strong enough for your tastes. But that is, you will win a great prize, I promise you, if you come up with Ric Flair and Scott feeding horses.
If you can work a picture of me getting fed the strawberry, you can have this show. So.
And then you have to give it to Scott so he can make good use out of it. But let's hear
anyway.
It.
I had to do that. I had to do that.
I like it. No, it gave me the good Photoshop idea. I'm calling for it. Let's go. Get on it.
Let's
PCB
do it.
Nation.
Yes, I actually want to see that myself. Right. I enjoyed the one we did. Who was that? Was that Jason Greenhouse that
yes.
did that? The
yep.
first one.
I believe so.
The collage of everybody. That was tremendous.
Yes.
Well done, Jason.
Yes. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really funny.
Yes. Well
it's all
done.
Of Scott and his loves and his hates.
Exactly. And my hates all so, in one. It was. But, it's a myriad of emotions.
But speaking
anyway,
speaking of the centerfold revelation, let's hear the tease.
Champion Ric Flair, this is it. We are just moments away for the...
Shut up, Mooney. This is what it's all about. The prize photo of your old lady, Savage. The one we're going to put up on the big screen in the Hoosier Dome so everybody can see what she looks like. We've had it all taken care of. We took out all the flaws. She's as close to perfect as she's going to get. Oh, and believe me, this is the real deal. Ladies and gentlemen, it's WrestleMania 8. It's Indianapolis, Indiana. It's bright lights. It's the big cities. It's long limousines. It's women lined up for a block to take a shot at the champ and Mr. Perfect. But most of all, it's Randy Savage's attempt to walk the aisle to defend the honor of his lady and to try and capture the most coveted trophy of them all. the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Randy, after taking the worst beating of your life, keep this in mind when you're flat on your back. Look up to the big screen, because Mr. Perfect will be waving the fold-out of Liz and Pal. She's all the way live. And then Liz, to top it off, you got one last shot, baby, at Space Mountain.
Can I come along with you this time, Jim?
Let's go over to Gino.
Was there ever a pair of greater talkers put together than those two?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And awesome job by Vince for a guy that was injured to give Perfect something to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
To absolutely not waste him while he was rehabbing his back. So, but yeah, those two guys were just absolute gold together. You couldn't come up with anything better than the two of them together. And then you add Bobby in the mix and it's just a trio of greatness right there.
Yeah, so, what a great unit.
Yes. The match speaks for itself.
Awesome.
We sit here and whine about or talk about why they didn't do Hogan and Flair, and now you look back and you're like, kind of glad they didn't. this was a 10 times better match, and we would see over the next, what, 5 or 6 years that these two really have good chemistry together. They really do.
Yes.
Again, this is Flair. Flair has good chemistry with everybody.
Yeah.
But Savage is a guy you don't really have to push to put a good match on. You know, Savage was kind of rusty in this aspect. I mean, yeah, he wrestled Jake at Tuesday in Texas, but he really hadn't put on I'm sure he wrestled house shows, but, you know, I'm talking about the big stage. Mm-hmm. I don't think you've seen a legitimately big match out of Savage since the loss at WrestleMania 7 to the Ultimate Warrior. And here he once again brings the goods and puts on a stellar match. Now, I graded this match. I just realized I graded a little lower than I thought. You graded it higher than me, but this is one of your favorite matches of all time. So, I may have to watch this match again and
I think I even undergraded it. I could probably bump it up even more.
Well, you have it graded. Let's put it this way. You graded it the same as Piper and Brett. Yeah. Is this match better than Piper and Brett?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I think this deserves to be a 4. I have it a 4. I think it deserves to be a 4.5.
Yeah. I think I have to put it up to a 4 myself. It's just a great storytelling. Perfect is such a, and I don't, I mean, we do swear on here, but I normally don't say it with such. But he was such a dick in this match.
Yeah, he was awesome.
He would throw Savage, grab him by the hair, throw him down the ramp, and it was just tremendous.
And,
just
of course, the best part, I think it was a week later. I have this episode of Primetime on tape when they did at this point they were doing the round table. So it was Perfect and Bobby and Vince, and I think it was like Duggan or Slaughter and Hillbilly or something.
Right.
And they have they're shilling the videotape. To buy the WrestleMania videotape, and Perfect says, is the, actually, it might have been Gorilla. It was Gorilla at the table with Vince, too. And Perfect says, oh, yeah, if you look on the tape, you can see the handful of tights, and Gorilla just snaps back. Well, you can also see the 47 times you jumped in the ring on there, too, and then Perfect just shuts up. but it always made me laugh the way Gorilla shot back at him like that. And it's true. Perfect constantly interferes in this match.
Oh, yeah, he's all over this place. All over the place. I mean, and obviously they gave them a more than enough time, almost 18 minutes. Probably could have given them more.
And also great when you think about the two styles. It's so perfect because Flair was tremendous at building a heat segment on offense, really working the leg and beating the guy down. And Savage was the ultimate babyface seller. Could really, really build emotion and really build heat as he's getting his ass kicked. And so the majority of the match is that, you know, Flair is punishing him and it's in punching his leg, and it's just a really great 18-minute story. And of course, halfway through, Liz comes flying out from the back. A horde of referees, including a very young Shane McMahon, are trying to force her back. Liz fights through them and stays at ringside through the end. Mm-hmm. And of course, the match builds to crescendo. As we mentioned before with Bret Hart, of course, Ric Flair also blades. His is a little more obvious. I think he pretty much blades on camera, and his blood is just like it almost looked fake. It was like fucking pink.
Yeah, well, his usual orange hair would come out in the end, yeah.
So, but Flair actually did get in trouble afterwards for blading, so. Of course, that would all build into the crescendo of this finish.
She winked at me, she did too. Don't get in my face. Savage in big trouble here. Look at her, she's giving the eye, I'll meet y'all back. Savage is gonna win this thing. It's over. Savage is off. It is over. So much over.
figure four out of ten. I would have to succeed in Whitfield. You bet.
Just an awesome scene, of course. Flair snaps, goes over and plants a big bloody kiss on Liz, and Liz starts smacking him in the face, and then Savage snaps and beats Flair down again. And it's just a great moment seeing Savage and Liz celebrate without Hogan hanging over his shoulder.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And for what would probably end up being Savage's final huge moment in his WWF career, it was very emotional, and you could tell that pop is ridiculous, and he deserved it. And yes, the reason that it's a special moment is because, and this actually is kind of sad to say, this is Elizabeth's last pay-per-view moment.
On WWF TV.
WWF TV.
Sure to have Meddy in WCW.
Yeah, but it would be different there. I didn't like the way WCW did to her and her character, but that's neither here nor there.
You can join the ladies of Jim's legend.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, what's that, Pinky and Mousy and what the hell their names were? They were insane. Those women. Oh my God.
Yes, they were.
This is the final moment for the first lady of the World Wrestling Federation, and I honestly think 19 years later, I think she's still held in that regard, even with all the divas that have come through since. I think she's still held in that regard over everyone else, probably because of what happened to her. And do we want to get into that now, or do we want to wait till? We didn't mention it in the, you know, we didn't mention it in the review, so we'll wait.
Yeah, but I don't know when we do mention it. When do you want to talk about it? When it actually happens?
Well, if we're never going to see her on camera again, we might as well do it now.
No, we don't. Yeah, why don't you talk about it?
Yeah. So, well, Elizabeth would leave. She would hang out for a little bit in 92. I think she would tour with...
Yeah, she toured throughout the summer with Savage.
But she would not be on camera for any of his title defenses on pay-per-view. Well, there would only be one, but...
Yeah.
She would end up going to... She would actually take time off.
Yeah, she didn't do anything for a while. Her and Savage would get divorced in 93.
Yeah, they would actually... Which is funny, this crazy storyline and you know, that they would kind of renew their vows or whatever, get married, have this whole thing, and in the end, in reality, they were
falling apart quickly.
Yeah, they were falling apart quickly.
And they actually put it in the magazine when they got divorced in 93.
Did they really?
Yeah, they announced it in the magazine.
Oh. Yeah, it says it right here on Wikipedia. Savage issued a statement that was printed in WWF Magazine revealing that he and Elizabeth were no longer together and thanking the fans for their support through the years. The publication of Savage's statement marked at that time a rare acknowledgement for the wrestler's private lives for both the WWF and its flagship publication. Savage continued with WWF for two more years, blah, 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 blah. In between her WWF and then she'd go to WCW stints. Did you know this? Elizabeth worked briefly for ESPN as a commentator for speedboat racing events.
You know what? I have heard that. I forgot about it. Yes. Yeah, she did.
So, in January of 1996, Miss Elizabeth would go back to wrestling and would join her now ex-husband, the Macho Man, when he would be in WCW.
Quickly turned on him.
turned on him, obviously, and became Ric Flair's valet in the Four Horsemen, which is pretty funny.
Yep.
Then she would turn on the Four Horsemen and join the New World Order.
Yep.
But she would get pushed all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's when she seemed happiest, though, actually, when that reunited with Savage with the NWO for that little stretch. She seemed pretty into it.
Yeah.
And, of course, they made her, you know, when she first came in, she was like the old Liz, and then they quickly turned her into a kind of a modernized, kind of sluttier-looking Liz, which I liked. I thought she looked pretty hot in those last few years.
I agree she did, too, but, I mean, it's to me, it doesn't take it. It's, you know, I like the old school. Elizabeth,
yeah, of course. But she ended up getting more active in the matches, and then after the NWO split, she started being exclusively with Lex Luger when he was repackaged. It's just the total package, and then she was with him. I think she was there until WCW closed, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, of course, she was in the destructive relationship with Luger, where they both were pretty much high on pills and alcohol all the time. And, unfortunately, it was, what, 2002? Or 3?
2003.
Okay, 2003 is when she passed away, basically of an overdose.
Yeah.
Pills and wine washed down. So, and then of course WWE went on to do the classless confidential piece where they basically blamed WCW and Lex Luger for killing Liz, which was kind of crazy. So,
she would wrestle in WCW. Yeah, she was released on August 17th, 2000.
Okay, so she almost made it to the end.
Yeah, she almost made it to the end. Despite being let go, but she, you know, she was married in between.
Yes,
she married Carrie Lubetsky, who was a South Florida attorney, in December of 1997. The wedding was held at the Cuban Hebrew Temple in Miami Beach. The marriage was short-lived. They were separated and officially divorced on April 19th, 1999. Despite being let go by WCW, Elizabeth and Lex Luger stayed together as a couple. Friends of Elizabeth said the two were planning on getting married sometime in 2003. After her departure from wrestling, she began working at the front desk for Main Event Fitness in Marietta, Georgia, which is a gym that Luger had owned for years. After he and the guy who would be Sting, Steve Borden, mm-hmm. opened it during their wrestling heyday. And then she would do a couple of other things. And then in April of 2003, right before her death, she was involved in a domestic dispute with Luger, who allegedly struck her in the garage of their townhouse and all this other stuff.
Yeah,
it was not pretty.
No.
The end was not pretty. And on May 1st, 2003, she died. And it really was sad because it's not the way you would think she should go, you know?
No, and it's someone that, you know, you can point to the wrestling business really tearing apart her marriage and then eventually taking her life as a result.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Liz. And to Pinky, Mousy, and Snooky or whoever the hell was on Jim's board, we bless you too.
Yeah.
But yeah, boy, were they vicious, huh? Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't say a word about Liz.
No, they were Piperette and Sneaky, and I don't know. They had a bunch of weird nicknames. They probably all went to Jersey Shore after that. They probably all those kind of nicknames. Anyway, why don't we move on? Our next match, I'll let you take this because this is one of your favorite guys.
Oh, no,
hang on.
We got some stuff to do. You are out of control tonight. First, we need to wrap up this match. Of course, Vicious Savage won a great match, and then
yes, it is.
We had the tremendous post-match antics.
Oh, yes.
Or promo,
right, yeah.
Rather.
Yes.
Simon, I'm going to attempt to get comments from the now former World Wrestling Federation champion, Ric Flair's executive...
Shut up, Mooney. This is the way it is. Macho Man Randy Savage, you call yourself a macho man? Well, what's so macho? What an injustice. I'm not going to stand out here and say anything that wasn't true, Macho Man. You had a handful of trunks. The trunks were up. The stupid referee, a bad job of officiating. I'll tell you, Bobby, you saw what happened. Did you see what happened?
I just got down from the booth.
He had your tights. I saw it. It's on camera. It's on tape. I got it. There's nothing to worry about. He had
there is nothing to worry about. Wait a minute.
I know.
The tactics that Ric Flair was using out there, they're questionable.
What we have right now is a man... that'll walk around town tonight claiming to be the real world champion. Claiming to be the second time WWE heavyweight champion. He'll be claiming it all. And most of all, he'll be claiming the love of that Jezebel, Elizabeth. Now, Savage, unlike a lot of people, in the greatest sport of them all, we don't cry over spilt milk. We reassemble a team. the money, the brains, the nucleus, and we say to our opponent, you did it once, now let's see you do it again. One time means nothing to my career. Tell him, Mr. Perfect.
I'll tell you what, one time means nothing, Macho Man. Like your old lady, you're going to be damaged goods because this man has never taken a shortcut in the world of wrestling. You, Macho Man, have taken a shortcut. You had a handful of tights. We were out there, we were wrestling. This man was the greatest World Wrestling Federation champion of all time. Here it comes. Let everybody have a good long look at it, because they're all going to see how the handful of tights. Here it comes.
Watch, Moody, you get a good look. Look at that handful of tights. That's a champion. He cheated. He doesn't deserve to have the title.
He's like his old lady, a cheater.
Well, the way it stands right now, there is a new champion in the WWE.
Now, we regroup together. Where I go, Perfect goes. It's all monitored by Eden. And like I said before, Savage, might not be tomorrow, it might be the day after, but I'm going to beat you, and I'm going to beat you bad, and every time I see your old lady, I'm going to kiss her on those moist, wet lips. Woo!
Ah, baby champ!
Well, as you know, this is not a very safe place to be. I'm out of here. Let's go over to Mean Gene Okerlund.
Shut up, Mooney.
That was awesome. I liked the way
he got him
that.
Twice. He got him twice in that.
Yeah,
on this show. Talk to me quick about Moody. That promo, though, about the diversity with Flair and being soft and kind of silent, and Bobby and Perfect screaming and flipping out. What are your thoughts on it?
Soft, moist lips. Very funny. It just categorizes three tremendous personalities, and I'm glad, you know, when we get to the latter part of the show and we get to the main event, I think we all, in the end, were better off, because this ended up being, from top to bottom, the complete package.
Yes.
A tremendous build, tremendous feud, and a great, great match. 2-4 stars for us, 4.5 is close on this show. And I think I think as you keep listening, you'll realize that this WrestleMania is a lot better than many people remember it being.
Well, the first half definitely is.
Yeah, there's a few. We get to the end and it starts to fizzle out, except for one great moment, but... All right, so there we are. Your new World Wrestling Federation champion for the second time in his great career, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And it'd actually be a pretty good summer seeing him on camera with the title, and everything was very different. It really starts, this show really starts to show the change. And I keep saying that tonight, and we'll continue over the next few vaults, just change. It's a big, big year of change, and you see it after this show. Just the way the programming is, just everything looks different. I think because everybody that we're used to is in our childhood is slowly starting to fade. And one big guy that fades, we'll get to later. But that's a great match. One of the greatest of all time. And congrats to the Macho Man. And to Flair, who put on a great match and a tremendous post-match promo. Now, do we move on to your debut?
No, first we need to get...
Oh, we have one more thing.
Killing me tonight.
Man, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I'm really upset that I was superimposed out of these pictures. It's really pissing me off, okay? Jason Greenhouse, I want my pictures back. You need to find them. Or make them. One or the other. In any event, before we move on, let us talk to our good friends at WrestleChat.net.
And that's because... Promotion considerations paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Right. remind me not to do to try not to do a podcast after back-to-back 14-hour work days. Oh my god.
You don't do very well when you're on 40 hours of sleep, so.
Yeah, 40 hours over the last 5 days. Anyway, WrestleChat.net, great site. We continue to extol its virtues. They have a great message board, and it's where we get all of our news for your listening pleasure here on our headline shows. And we have one coming up next week. So,
yep.
But yeah, WrestleChat.net. And if you're if you're on WrestleChat.net and you're reading all the news and notes, you can, and you're ready to listen to one of our podcasts, the link is right there. So thank you to our good friends at WrestleChat.net. All right. Let me check my list, make sure. Is that everything? Okay, now. Now you can talk about your debut.
Finally. All right. Of course, now we hit the second half of this show where things start to taper off quite a bit after the red-hot first half, and that is the model Rick Martel making his first singles wrestling a match return in some time, right? Has it been a year? I don't think he's been in a...
Yeah, since the blindfold match. I don't think he's even been on camera, right? He wasn't at SummerSlam.
He was at the Rumble?
Oh yeah, he was definitely in the Rumble.
Yeah, so but he wasn't he wasn't at SummerSlam or Survivor Series.
No, he wasn't either, and he wasn't at Tuesday Night Tech. So he hasn't been on one pay per view in a year. So.
And he takes on a brand new debuting superstar, the Native American Tatanka. Simon Cowell royalties coming your way.
That is 100 times worse than the Duggan song. What the hell were they thinking when they did these? I got the vibe from the tribe, so let me be brief. I'm the warrior Indian chief of first. You are not going to play this for every Tatanka match, are you?
You know it. You know it. Simon Cowell, man, he's demanding the royalties. Duggan's be phased out soon. We need to bring Tatanka.
Horrible. Horrible. But most of all, I want to thank all my little friends and all my little fans. Little fans. Tatanka. Buffalo. Sounds like a goddamn pedophile.
You're lucky I didn't bust out the Nasty Boy Stomp one for the Nasty Boy matches.
Oh, good lord. Anyway, a little background here. Tatanka is, his name is Chris Chavis. He actually is a Lumbee Native American. Before he became Tatanka, he was actually... Wow. And I thought Matt Rotella was the master of crap. Tatanka would try out for various NFL teams. The Dolphins, Lions, Redskins, Raiders, they could probably all use him now.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of the 80s, he was actually a bodybuilder. Maybe they were going to use him in the WBF. Yes. I don't know. You know, who the heck knew? But instead... And instead, he would be given a solid character and make his pay-per-view debut here at WrestleMania 8.
Yeah, now he actually, they started doing vignettes for him in late 92, and they actually said his name, Chris Chavis, and then he went through the transformation to Tatanka in those videos.
Late 91.
Late 91, rather.
Late 91, yeah.
Pretty cool the way they did that. They had him transform. Yes. And he gets a lot of fanfare here. He actually has a bunch of Native Americans alongside with him dancing in the ring, and then he comes out, of course, with his famous music and war cry. He's got the red strip in his hair representing the Lumbee Indian tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood of his forefathers. He gets his little tomahawk and his eagle feathers and his little, I don't know, what's that thing called? Little flaps in front of his tights. I don't know.
Oh, the little chap things? I don't know. Dress gear or something? Yeah.
And this match, you know, it's in a tough spot coming off that red hot world title match, but they were smart. They only had to go 4.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of action, quick action. Tatanka gets to win with a high cross body. Decent enough for what it was. It was just to get Tatanka out there, get him a win. And, of course, right. He would start his long-standing undefeated streak here. So Tatanka gets his win, and that's pretty much all we have to say about that, I think.
Yeah, no, there's not much more. Bummer for Rick Martel. Although it does begin, or is this end the feud or begin the feud? With the feathers.
It continues from here on and off to the end of the year, and then okay. It concludes at our last pay-per-view this year.
Okay, that's what I thought. You know, they have produced a myriad of exemplary albums for World Wrestling Federation music, and you have to overplay the crappiest of all of them. Indian pedophile. Anyway, let's move on, please. Our next match is our final title match of the evening, and now we can give you the background on what happened to my beloved Legion of Doom. For as we mentioned earlier in the show, we do have new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, and it is a guy who was long overdue for legit gold.
I've been watching you for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man in need, and never ask for it. This is love, girl. This is more than a crush.
Since you didn't get there, you need to hear it before. Well, yes. You thought they were going to be wrestling, but they're not. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't play that other crap theme again that you were just playing. Yes, the Legion of Doom, my beloved Hawk and Animal, are no longer tag team champions. For on February 2nd, 1992, just a couple months before this show, at probably McNichols Arena in Denver, home of the Nuggets, I'm assuming. I don't think it was a smaller place. I'll have to check our man Graham Cawthon's History of WWE.com site to double check that. But it was probably McNichols Arena in Denver. The Legion of Doom lost the tag team championships to a guy who, well, to a guy who already has tasted tag team gold in his career, and a guy who was long overdue to have a legit championship. And that is, of course, the team of Irwin R. Scheister, IRS, and the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. And they would actually put together the coolest tag team nickname. They were simply Money Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you you know just as well as I do, JR, what the greatest change would be for DiBiase since becoming tag team champion in this new, in 1992. He wouldn't wear them all the time.
Not yet, though. He doesn't have them until late in the year, so we'll talk
okay.
about it then.
We'll talk about that, but he makes an awesome, exemplary ring apparel change.
Yes.
We'll get to that when we go across the pond, wink nudge, next week. Here they take on the, and this is another thing we need to talk about.
Yes.
Here they take on the team of Typhoon and Earthquake, the natural disasters, who are now baby faces.
Yeah, well, what happened was Jimmy Hart sold their title shot to Money Inc., and that's how Money Inc. won the tag team titles. So the natural disasters were pissed off and turned face off of that, saying that, you know, Jimmy Hart sold them down the river. And I remember being upset about this face turn as well, just like Undertaker earlier, thinking, how could Earthquake be a face after all he's put us through, making
right.
us cry with Hulk Hogan and all that stuff? How can mm-hmm. this guy be a fan favorite?
Right.
But they actually kind of worked in a weird way as fan mm-hmm. favorites, surprisingly
yeah.
enough. And of course, another quick fun fact, according to the WWF magazine, Money Inc. was actually supposed to defend the titles against your boy Duggan and Sergeant Slaughter at the show.
Mm.
But I'm guessing that was just a red herring until the disasters turned face. They probably didn't want to spoil it. So, unless
yeah,
maybe
but
it was the original idea. I don't know.
Could you just imagine?
Well, they wouldn't have won.
Oh, thank God. Because 19 years later, on this night in 2011 in Norwalk, Connecticut, I may have to just retire from the Place to Be podcast if I have to sit here and actually talk about him winning a legitimate championship. Thank you, Earthquake and Typhoon.
Yes.
Thank you. Anyway, they win the match by countout, and really, it's not very good.
No.
It's not very good. I don't know, maybe it's the chemistry, maybe IRS and DiBiase really haven't...
And it's
felt...
it's an intentional countout as well. They walk out.
Yeah, they just walk out, which DiBiase was always known for. Obviously, this is Rotundo's second, Mike Rotundo's second stint, third reign as champion, second with a different partner. Obviously, mm-hmm. he was champion twice before with Barry Windham as the U.S. Express. So 8 years later, 8 years later, after losing to Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik, Mike Rotundo enters WrestleMania as a tag team champion again. So, and this time he retains it, although through nefarious means, even though natural disasters win the match. But yeah, nothing earth-shattering, nothing really great here.
No, we'll talk about Money Inc. more over the next year and a half of shows.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they were a cool team, and DiBiase was obviously out of things to do, and IRS had never really picked up any steam. He had that one feud with the Boss Man in late 91, but nothing crazy there. So it was good to get these guys together and let them start working as a team.
I agree. Gives them something to do. But the tag division just totally looks completely different now. It seems like it's been turned upside down over the last 6 months or so.
Definitely.
We actually, just to check the count, we actually have 9 matches. We thought we had 8. We said 8 earlier.
Correct.
I apologize. It is actually 9 matches. We forgot this one. I did too, actually. Not the pay-per-view date. Why don't you do this one? You can give us this one, as it is not a pay-per-view debut per se. But I want you to let us in on it.
Yes. Our next to last match is Owen Hart facing Skinner. Of course, Owen Hart was the former Blue Blazer. We've talked about him over the last couple shows. He came in, Bret Hart's younger brother, who's teaming up with Jim Neidhart as the new foundation. Since the Rumble, Jim Neidhart has now been turfed. I think he got into some legal trouble at this point. That's why they got rid of him. And so they decided to go ahead and break Owen out as a single until a little bit later in the year when he actually gets back into another tag team. So
doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So and he faces Skinner here. We saw Skinner at this Tuesday in Texas. Of course, it's Steve Kern. This is his one and only WrestleMania appearance under the Skinner name. So not that much here. You could tell they were running quick on time. Obviously, they had to cut the Berserker Bulldog match, and this one only goes 1:09. Skinner tries to spit the... he does spit it in Owen's face, but Owen shakes it off and then rolls him up and gets the win in a minute. So, you know, it actually makes Owen look pretty strong to get that quick of a win at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and you know that at least another 4 or 5 minutes, these two probably could have had a decent match.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfortunate that they were chopped off at the end. But big win for Owen. Big win for Owen, who's now 1-1 in his career, because, again, he faced Mr. Perfect at WrestleMania 5, of course, under the guise of the Blue Blazer. But here, again, there's really not much to say. Owen and they just kind of do a little spell before we get to our final match. And I think they actually unintentionally made Owen look pretty good here.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. All right. Are you ready? This has got a lot in it.
Yes.
There's a lot to go over here. We have finally reached our main event. And at first you thought, again, for those that may or not be familiar with the show and are new to the Place to Be podcast, welcome. You're probably thinking, I thought this was Hogan Flair. Well, as we saw a few matches before, that wasn't the case. After the, and we already played it earlier, Justin played it earlier, when Hulk Hogan was announced as the number one contender for the World Wrestling Federation title and would face Ric Flair at WrestleMania 8 right here in Indianapolis, one guy completely flipped out. And that was, of course, Sid Justice, who we all knew got screwed at the Royal Rumble by the Orange Doughboy and now was hoping for his just desserts and would get his title shot. Well, he didn't. The fix was in. And even I was upset. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I definitely was upset.
But even I
was on the Sid bandwagon.
I was pissed. Yeah, I was definitely on the Sid bandwagon at this point. So Sid crumples the paper and gets all pissed off. But then after, what was it, a couple weeks, I think he kind of relaxed and said, all right, everything's okay.
Yep, he calmed down.
And on that same February, and this is probably next to the Savage one in 88, I think my brother's favorite Saturday Night's Main Event moment ever. On that February Saturday Night's Main Event that we talked about earlier, it was a tag match between Sid and Hogan against Flair and Taker. This was right before Taker turned face.
Mm-hmm.
And Sid had this kind of nonchalant, kind of nouveau riche look on his face, kind of just standing there. And
did you say Andrew Riche look on his face?
Well, yeah, of course. He had a Laker hat and a Hornets jersey on. and he standing at the apron, and he's trying to get the tag, and Hogan's stretching, and Sid's like, no. Dropped off the apron. walked out. Walked out on Hogan. Hogan's boy, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who had still not yet been cleared to wrestle, is yelling at Sid, what are you doing? Get back up there. What's the matter with you? And what does Sid tell him? It's Grace. It's right in the mic. You better shut up or I'll just punch your face, which is tremendous. And then he walks out. After that is probably, I don't think it comes close anywhere. Probably one of the greatest stretches of jobber destruction on record.
Yes, and of course, I mean, he would pick up a new manager this time.
Yes.
Dr. Harvey Whippleman, who we talked about with the iconic Big Bully Busick.
That's right.
So Harvey's with Sid here, and then, yes, I'll let you tell about this delicious run of heel monster jobbery killing,
yes,
you know, Wrath of Terror.
Every week, Sid would go up against the Sal G's, Barry O's, and Brian McNeese of the world and just absolutely fold them up and destroy them, like just absolute ham and egger stiffs.
Oh, yeah, and they'd all go out on stretchers, too.
And even after they'd been put on the stretcher, he'd still kick this. There were times he'd even knock the stretcher over anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just flattening bums left and right. It was just awe-inspiring.
And he broke Virgil's nose. That's why Virgil would have the face mask for a while.
Yes. It was absolutely awesome. And then, of course, there's the awesome moment when he visits the barbershop and then rips apart the barbershop set. And then the... They should have made a T-shirt of it. The iconic picture of him screaming into the camera with shaving cream all over his face. Mm-hmm. It's tremendous.
Yes, very good stuff. Yes. And of course, that'd be it for Beefcake for a year after this.
Yeah, Beefer would not come back until until early 93. Yep. Now, the other big thing going on leading up to this match was the rumored retirement of the Immortal Hulk Hogan. As was mentioned in our open, this was could have been the last match of the Immortal one. And actually, in one of the more iconic, we've used that word a lot tonight.
Yes.
Iconic interview shows on that, what was it, the Countdown to WrestleMania show or whatever. Yep. The hell, I don't remember what it was called.
Yep.
Vincent Hogan actually had one of those heart-to-heart, touchy-feely sit-downs.
Yeah, I was in the room with all the big Hogan posters.
Yep. He had his tight white shirt on, I think, or whatever it was. And Hogan said, win, lose, or draw, this is my last match.
No, I think he says it maybe.
Or maybe his last
match. He doesn't know. But it, like, the result wouldn't matter. He would know then. So, right. And of course, he would be gone as soon as the match ended. He'll be gone until February the next year. So.
Right.
And also gone in the weeks after this show is Sid, who
was
set for a big feud. We'll get to that in a moment.
Yep.
But he ended up walking out less than a month after main event in WrestleMania. Rumors swirled over why he departed, either from failing a drug test or being pissed over his WrestleMania payout. Also playing a role in this match is a new character named Papa Shango, played by Charles Wright, an indie star brought in to do a voodoo gimmick. And leading up to the show, they show little vignettes of him doing a voodoo potion with Hulk Hogan garb and kind of trying to put a curse on Hogan. So it's kind of teased that he'd be getting involved somewhere. And of course, he did come out at the end of this match and get involved, causing the disqualification. But let's quickly talk about what happens. This is per Dave Meltzer, why we didn't get Flair Hogan at this show.
Yes.
There were always some different rumors and different stories, but this is the most recent thing we found on the Wrestling Classic message board and why he talks about the situation. The plan was always Hogan Sid dating back a year. Business was very different then. House shows were advertised big. You didn't do 2 to 3 matches in every market on a house show and then the pay-per-view. I knew Hogan Sid as the main event maybe 10 months out. When they did the TV announcement of Hogan Flair, it was just an angle, as Flair already knew he'd be facing Savage by then. What people don't realize is that Flair Hogan started off doing good business, but it had petered out by December, months before Mania. Vince was going to build to Hogan leg-dropping Flair at the house shows early 1992, but after a terrible house in Florida, Vince felt it had already run its course. He challenged all the shows he changed all the shows to Hogan and Piper versus Flair and Sid, and it was Hogan Sid drawing the money. The only Hogan Flair Mania hint was in September of 91 when they started the house show run, and Flair wanted to do 30-minute matches, but Hogan only wanted to do 15. He told Flair they needed to save the 30-minute match for Mania. But when crowds of the program dropped the second time in our market, only did 5,400 at the Cow Palace, and our market had it first. There was no Mania in their future. In hindsight, people think it would have been a big deal, but it had already run its course months before Mania, and WWE promoted the program ass backwards, and Flair wasn't even considered special by WWF fans. I'm a friend of Flair and never had any interest in paying to see Sid, but that's how it was then. So, interesting stuff there from Meltzer.
Yeah, and Dave usually is gold, so...
Especially at that time period, and I know he is close to Flair, and he always has all the Flair info, so... But
right.
This, you know, it makes you wonder why they ran Hogan Flair on house shows right away, why they didn't build up to it, but...
Yeah, that's the reasoning I have. Why would you even try to test it? I mean, you shouldn't even do that. It's almost like they blew it anyway. I don't know.
But the interesting thing is Hogan Sid was drawing money, and that, I mean, to me, that's also a marquee matchup, so... It's too bad that all this happened with Hogan leaving. You know, they could have done Hogan Flair here and then built a Hogan Sid at SummerSlam and had two major draws.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it bugs me because and I said this a couple of vaults ago. You know, Mean Gene mentions on the True Story of WrestleMania DVD that they thought this WrestleMania was a disappointment. And that is because I think they totally botched what could have been a decent match, a money-making match. Why the house shows?
Yeah,
I don't get it. I mean, to me, I almost feel like Flair's being disrespected, like he's just another guy.
Mm.
He's not just another guy.
Yeah, we know.
And Hogan Flair is not just another – well, yeah, duh. It's not just another match, and that's my horse. But that's just another match. It's not just another match. It's the two most iconic guys of the decade, and you're going to test it on house shows? How stupid can you be? See, that's why this whole thing annoys me, because I think this still could have been a legitimate match at WrestleMania. But instead, of course it shot its low, because you showed it to everybody already. I mean, it just made no sense. And notice they picked two... The other thing about that Meltzer description that kind of... I don't know, that I'm a little suspect on, is the two examples of house show gates is they picked two areas that historically are not really WWF areas, Florida and San Francisco.
Yeah, but I think his point is that San Francisco is where they had their first match. And then when they came back through the second time, the market had already dipped. So I think his point is that there was no interest in seeing that feud continue after they had already seen it.
See, my point is that's not the reason that the gate was bad. But I'm sure the rest of that show was probably full of crap.
Yeah, but still, you would hope Flair Hogan would draw no matter what. Yeah, I think that's
well,
the point.
Exactly. But my point is the match should never even have been wrestled on house shows. I'm sorry. It shouldn't have.
No, probably not. You're right.
So that's my problem with the whole thing is that.
Well, you know what, too, though? You got to figure the fall, that's when WWF was always struggling. So maybe they were hoping it would pop business, you know?
Yeah. Still, though, if you're going to pimp a match for WrestleMania to fit 60-something thousand people in a dome, you want to put the match that most people. And I'm not, trust me, I'm not jumping off the Sid bandwagon. A Hogan Sid is, I think, a marquee match. I'm not saying that. But
well, the funny thing is, too, it's like we come up with all these scenarios as to why this could have worked and what they could have done. But honestly, I don't think anyone would really go back and change the show.
No, I wouldn't either. I'm just saying that their reasoning for the match not working is dumb, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have wasted that unbelievable match on...
No,
you know,
like he says, though, business was different then. I mean, house shows are different. You could get away with running something across the loop a few times and then still having one more match on pay-per-view. You know, it was just different then. That's how they did it.
We'll see. I'm not.
They did the house show to build, or they do a big match build to the house show run and then cap it off. So, I mean, this is how it went.
Yeah. But you're right, though. I wouldn't change the show either. So, instead, this is our main event.
Yep, and I, you know, there's really not much to say about the match itself.
No, it's two big guys.
12 minutes. You know, Sid looks good though; he gets a lot of offense in.
Yeah, Hogan. Hogan. I don't want to say mails it in, but he kind of. I always felt that Hogan kind of went through the motions in this match.
Well, he kicks out of the power bomb, which sucked.
Well, Well.
Well, and then of course he hits the leg drop, and Sid kicks out, and that's the point of another more contention. Because he kicks out, then Harvey jumps in the ring. And, of course, there's a couple of stories. I don't know if Harvey came in late Or right. if Sid told him to come in late so he can make Hogan look stupid and kick out a leg drop, you know, who knows. But yeah, Harvey comes in, the ref calls the DQ, and then Shango comes out and gets involved as well. And it looks like almost he may have came out late, too, because you wonder if he was supposed to be the DQ reason. So the end definitely seems a little botched.
Right.
But, of course, Shango comes out, the double-teaming Hogan, and that is when we get the most memorable moment of this show. Now, a few things here. Shrewd move by Vince with Hogan leaving. Obviously, he needed another top face. Undertaker wasn't ready yet. Savage could only do so much on his own. They needed another guy to kind of be his 1A. So they bring Warrior back, even despite all their issues in the summer of 91.
Yep.
This is, of course, now again where the second Ultimate Warrior rumors began, where a lot of people thought the first one died and this was a new Ultimate Warrior because he had the shorter hair and he looked a little bit different. Of course, it was not. It was always Jim Hellwig. And third, I actually had a dream 2 weeks before this show that Ultimate Warrior was coming back. It was a dream they were doing an event center and announcing the card, and one of the matches for the show was supposed to be Ultimate Warrior versus Smash. And I remember thinking, why would Warrior be at the show? So I thought that was very weird.
Well, the other question is, why the hell would Smash be back?
I don't know. Why was I dreaming about an event center? So that was another
That's the other thing, too.
Cool moment, though. Definitely a very memorable, one of the top WrestleMania moments of all time.
And top WrestleMania endings, absolutely. Yes. I remember my friend Brady, who lived up the street from me, marking out, because he was a big Warrior Mark. And he had this actually when he started becoming a big Taker Mark, too, because he loved the heel, the face turn, too. Yeah, you know, I don't know if it was the tights or the makeup, but definitely when you first see him, you're like, who the hell's this guy? Because, you know, Warrior the first time around wore a lot of pastels and whites and stuff. This time he came down, a lot of navy blue, dark red, like the makeup made him look different. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what threw people off. And the fact that he had like a Dorothy Hamill bob or something. I don't know what that was about. But it does kind of save the ending of the show because you're right. The from the DQ to when Warrior runs down is just an absolute mess.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what the fuck they were doing, but it was a disaster.
And Shango, he would actually get a pretty – he got a bigger push, I realize, once we get into the summer of 92. But at this point, he really hadn't been built up as much. He had just debuted.
Right.
So it's just kind of a weird ending to WrestleMania. Obviously, the Warrior stuff saves it, but very odd.
Yeah.
But let's do this. We got a ton of feedback, so I don't think we need to talk too much more about that match. It is what it is. Hogan will be back. I think we said our piece about the Flair thing, so – an excellent WrestleMania. The first half is all-time WrestleMania stuff. The second half drags it down to where I can't really consider it like a top five or six Mania, but it's definitely up there. And it's got two, you know, excellent matches, two excellent title matches, and a very memorable moment. So a very good show, a great show, really, but not a top echelon show.
Right.
Because the second half is just so poor.
Yeah, it's kind of like SummerSlam 89, you know, the first half just so iconic with unbelievable moments, and then the second half just kind of falls off the cliff.
Yep.
But like you said, we've got a myriad of feedback, which we always do, and we thank our excellent PTB Nation for giving it to us. So why don't we jump right in? I'll let you tackle the our page, and then okay. I'll handle the ones off of Graham Cawthon's history of WWE. So.
All right. Sir Jason Greenhouse, the first time in the event's history that special WrestleMania feel wasn't in the air. The talent was there, but the glitz and glamour is missing. Solid opener between Tito and Shawn. The Brain's El Reba line about Reba McIntyre, of course, was El Reba, was amazing. The pre-match interview was great. That cheapskate Helen Hart and her one piece of bologna on Roddy's sandwich. Nonetheless, this might have been Roddy's best match of his career. Jake and Taker could have been so much better, but it gave the Dead Man a second WrestleMania win and sent Jake packing for WCW. The WWE debut of Paul Ellering with LOD was a cool segment. Wish I could say the same about the debut of Lex Luger. That segment was awful. I never liked Lex was being interviewed or had a mic in his hand. Savage and Flair was amazing. The storyline with the picks of Flair and Liz was great. The match was a Matt classic between two ring generals. I love the post-match interview with Flair and Perfect. The heel team and the eight-man tag would have been a great Survivor Series team. Hogan and Sid, oh boy, what a mess. By this point, Hulkamania was running on fumes. Papa Shango missing his cue and a crappy finish doesn't help anything out. Warrior's return was a nice surprise, but Savage-Flair final match or Hogan-Flair would have been better. I'm sure Hogan whined and bitched his way to have himself and Sid be the final match. Overall, not one of the better Manias. The IC match and world title match stole the show. Dick Clark says he was waiting for the show and glad he was that we are back. So thank you, Dick. We're glad to be back. Karen Polland.
The Hot Scott.
Very underrated WrestleMania, in my opinion. In fact, I tend to think of most of the bad WrestleMania as good, but I'll save the big case of Revolution in a few weeks when you get to that WrestleMania. Gorilla and Bobby stole the show with their commentating. Michael Cole needs to start watching tapes of Bobby and Jesse Ventura, as I felt they were the best heel commentators of all time. And JBL. He didn't say that. I am. Shawn yes. begins his ascent up the card with a win over Tito, although the finish did look awkward, as I think Sherry was meant to grab Tito's leg to make him fall instead of Shawn just magically gaining weight over the previous few seconds. Of course, he actually grabbed the rope, Karen. That's what happened. He shifted his weight. Mm-hmm. Jake and Taker was a squash, but it was pretty effective, and Jake did the right thing by putting over the young talent. That felt weird typing that. LOD's promo was pretty cheesy, but of course Scott will suck anything LOD does with a straw. I'm not sure that's the only thing he would suck. Oh, Karen. Bringing the guns in his return.
Oh, good Lord.
Brett Piper is a great bout that easily is Piper's best. However, for Brett, this would continue his long trek up the mountain that would culminate in October. Funny how three of the biggest stars of the 80s were putting over three of the biggest stars of the 90s in the first three matches. The eight-man tag was fine for what it was, and I'm sure Scott enjoys another Hacksaw Jim Duggan match. I wonder what Scott's reaction was when it was announced that Duggan would be going to the Hall of Fame. The world title match is amazing, and I honestly think it's better than Savage Steamboat. It's such a hidden gem that it really deserves to be talked about more often. Tag title match was decent. Owen Skinner was too short, and Hogan Sid was crap on a stick. However, I did enjoy Sid shouting, "Shut up, you fat, bald little loaf," to Mean Gene before the match. Warrior returns, and you could argue he stole Hogan's thunder away from him for his last match. However, we'd all know Hogan would not be gone for long much, to the annoyance of one hitman. Overall, great show, deserves some recognition. Matt Davis, the Sanchez. Savage Flair is very underrated. That show itself isn't as bad as WrestleMania 1, 2, 11, 26, or 27, but it's not in the top half. Next year's will be just as disgusting, but we'll get to that later. Bret Piper's a great match with a great ending. When he was put on the sleeper, most everyone I knew thought it was over. Piper claiming he's the longest reigning IC champion even to this day is great, because the replay clearly shows Bret's shoulders were indeed down. Matthew Ravishing Rendell Ullman. Aside from probably the greatest WWF interview by Legion of Doom, Jake vs. Undertaker was awesome, though sadly Jake would leave after that. Hart and Piper, I suppose it was naive of me to think Piper would retain, but I did. Great match. Disaster's Money Inc. I love because they are both on the short list of greats to me. Hogan Justice, yawn. Why they blew the Royal momentum with Sid is mind-boggling. Flair and Savage did great, as they would be expected to. All in all, great pay-per-view to watch. Side note, Bushwhackers vs. Belly Brothers, and it wasn't shown. Oh well, I like them both, just glad they weren't on the card. Just glad they were on the card, rather. Mm-hmm. Austin Pfaff. I disagree with the true story of WrestleMania. This was a great WrestleMania. Shawn, Tito, Bret Piper, Savage Flair, all quality matches. Sid Hogan should not have gone on last, despite Warrior's big return. Sid had the line of the note, though. Shut up, you fat, bald-headed little oaf. Another great night for Gorilla and Bobby in the booth. One of my favorite events. The man with the name, J. Arsenio D'Amato.
Yes.
Taker buried Jake, and then Jake channeled Tony Montana and buried his head into a huge mountain of Colombo Yam Yam. Ironically, Jake fell victim to his own WrestleMania 6 promo, as he would spend years after this wallowing in the muck of his own avarice. Piper Brett was typical of this era, where the IC match was usually the best on the card. Today, not so much. I can't remember who the current IC champion is, and I follow every show. Bob Colling Jr., our boy Baba Shango. WrestleMania 8 is my favorite event. It was the first tape I bought back when Media Play was still in business here in Syracuse. I was in fourth grade, and I remember seeing the cover of it being Savage versus Flair and Hogan versus Sid. This was around 1999, when those four men were playing big roles in WCW television. As I continue to ramble, for me, it was a fabulous show. Michael Santana is a fine way to get Michaels a big event win. Piper Hart is classic. Savage Flair is one of their better matches, if not their best. Money Inc. was my favorite tag team, and the blow-off to Roberts Taker was very cool. Seeing Taker kick out of the DDT was a cool moment to witness. Just a fun-filled show. Jordan McKinnon. Decent show, not overwhelming, not good enough to sit down and watch now and then. But good enough to sit down and watch now and then. I could watch Piper Hart match over and over and never get tired of it. The crowd was fairly dead, but it was heavily papered, so it's to be expected. Flair Savage was good, and we finally get a break from the Yellow and Red Brother. Jared Incel. This is a pretty decent show in the post-cookie cutter WrestleMania. It is also the first WrestleMania Dome show since 6. Despite the return to the Dome atmosphere, for whatever reason, WrestleMania 8 has never struck me as a WrestleMania caliber event. I think the reason stems from the fact that every time I watch a show, I think of what could have been. I was always of the mindset that the original plan was the epic Hogan-Flair main event. Instead, we got a horrendous Hogan-Sid mess, and Savage-Flair turned out to be great despite the rush job buildup. While Savage-Flair and Bret Piper title bouts steal the show, even the matches are great and not excellent. The rest of the card is okay, but certainly nothing special. I understand a lot of the backstage politics of the time were instrumental in the way the show was booked, but I can't help but think, what if the card played out entirely different? To be specific, have Hogan Flair in the main event, put Savage over Jake in a loser leaves WWF match to effectively blow off that feud, keep Bret Piper and put Sid against Undertaker in a grudge match where a double turn occurs. This would have made a far better WrestleMania. I don't know if it would have been better, but it probably would have been better from a storyline perspective. If you had
I like the loser leave WWE concept, though.
Yeah, but do you do another one with Savage back to back years?
Yeah, I guess so.
They could have just had him beat him so bad that he was injured or something.
Yeah.
Or done it in a cage or something like that. Overall, decent WrestleMania, but could have been way better. My boy Smack, Brian Samek. I'm going to read your comments this time, buddy. This was a decent WrestleMania with two great matches of Flair Savage and Piper Hart, both with great endings. Bret would use that finish again at Survivor Series 96. Why didn't the Warriors drop the title to Money Inc. here? Were they too good to job on TV, God forbid, or was there another reason? That's a good point. I think they were pissed when they lost the titles.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that was the story behind that. Match would have been way better than Money Inc. versus the disasters that we got. Seeing Papa Shango not make it to the ring in time for his run in his classic, as we get to see Sid kick out of the leg drop. Has anyone done that before? Or had anyone done that before? I don't think so. Also, seeing Warrior come down looking Brian Pillman size was pretty funny, as were rumors the original Warrior was dead. Funny how Warrior regained his size a few weeks later. Wonder how that happened. WF must have a phenomenal training program. Overall, okay Mania, but the bottom half overall Manias. Great review. Glad to see you survived, Irene. And, of course, it was Ico Pro Regiment, I think, that Warrior used to get back. Dick Clark.
That's what shortened his hair.
Dick Clark says he was there, and it was great, and no more Hacksaw play-by-play. Corey Ferreira, great WrestleMania, the last big blowout for Federation years and Hogan in the WWF. Bret and Piper had a match, which I consider very underrated for the IC title and in Bret's career. Match of the night easily goes to Savage and Flair. What do you expect with Flair and Savage when they were still in their primes and could go? The angle for Savage and Flair I found entertaining. Undertaker ends his feud with Jake and goes 2-0. Jake leaves the WWF for several years. Hogan Sid match should not have been the main event of WrestleMania, but it's Egomania running wild, so no surprise. The Warrior coming back was a surprise, though. Overall, decent show with some hidden gems. The Federation years are now behind us, and we now enter the new generation. Dave Hall. The WrestleMania have missed opportunities. Why Hogan Flair cannot meet in the match of the century stumps me. It would have made this such a memorable event. Instead, this WrestleMania seemed like an event of two halves. The first half to the end of Flair Savage was great. The matches are enjoyable. Shawn Michaels starts his journey towards greatness. The Undertaker taking the DDT on the floor and kicking out of really cemented him as a player. Hart and Piper put together a magnificent match and really stood out. Flair and Savage were also great. Then we have the second half. Tatanka Martel didn't really seem to bring it. The Natural Disasters plod through a mediocre match on Money Inc. and the poor Owen Hart only gets just over a minute. And then we have a sham that is Hogan Sid. The only good thing is when Sid kicks out a leg drop. Whether it's because Papa Shango was late or not, I don't care. He kicked out. Even the return of LOD and Paul Ellering can't save the second half of the show. I am so glad Hogan went on hiatus and we really picked things up at SummerSlam. Brian Samek. The Warriors apparently had it in their contract not to lose the titles on TV. That is pathetic, plain and simple. You refuse to lose a scripted match on TV. What a joke. I know you love the Warriors, Scott, but after hearing this and hearing their shoot interview, I have to disagree. Todd Weber, Ric Flair, woo! Cosby sweaters, woo! And the best match of Roddy Piper's career, goal-breaking. Okay, so there you go. Why don't you read from Graham's site, and then we'll wrap up, since this thing is wheeling out of control.
Yeah, for the most part. All right, let's go to the history of WWE's Facebook page, our good friend Graham Coffin, who, by the way, this had to have been you that did it. You put WrestleMania 7 to start.
Yeah, I fucked it up. Yeah.
Threw people off. It was Irene. We blame everything on Irene this week, pretty much.
Yeah.
Barry Rubin. Hi, guys. Great to check in with you again. WrestleMania 8 was a bit of a disappointment in my book. I really was looking forward to a Hogan-Flair main event. I did like the Snake Undertaker match, and the Hart Piper match was a classic that truly showed that the Hot Rod could actually wrestle a scientific match, which is what we discussed earlier. Elizabeth looked great in her purple dress, and it was funny to see Lex Luger promote the WWF while drinking his steroid milkshake. If you watch Luger's interview closely, it was totally filmed beforehand and not live, as per Luger taking a while to answer Bobby. You could also make the argument that his earpiece wasn't working or his shirt was on too tight on his bulging neck. I was also disappointed that we never got to see a Berserker Bulldog match. The next pay-per-view will also screw the Berserker too. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you, Mr. Rubin. Eric Caffiero. I loved WrestleMania 8 because my favorite two wrestlers growing up were Ric Flair and Randy Savage. I love the match and the feud, and Flair gives one of his best promos ever after the match, in which you played, and he absolutely did. And of course, Grill and Bobby were great, and it made the show that much better. Chris Scholds. WrestleMania 8 is still one of the best pay-per-views of all time. This was truly a stacked show. Bret Hart winning the IC title in a very physical match with Roddy Piper. This was Piper's last appearance in the WWF until returning in February 96 as the interim WWF president. Of course, Chris, we have to correct you. He comes back before that. We'll get there. There is also the double main event of Ric Flair defending and losing to new WWF champion Randy Macho Man Savage in a very hard-hitting and entertaining encounter. Flair bled heavily in the match, and seeing Macho Man win the WWF Championship for a second time is definitely worth looking at. And Hulk Hogan scoring off with Sid Justice, which is a good match, but more notable for the return of the Ultimate Warrior, making the save as Papa Shango helped Sid double-team Hogan at the end of the match. This was the last time Hogan and the Warrior would earn WWF ring at the same time, in a very memorable way to close the show. All in all, this is still one of the best WrestleMania events of all time, and I would highly recommend checking it out. Jay Hinchy. Ah, yes, WrestleMania 8. Well, what can be said about this mania? Let's see. Bret Hart and Hot Rod in a classic war for the IC title. Macho Man and Ric Flair in one of the most personal feuds for the WWF E title. The battle between Hulk Hogan and the Insane One, as Gorilla called him, known as Sid. The return of the Ultimate Warrior and the debut of Lex Luger. HBK kicking things off with Tito Santana. A fun match with Undertaker and Jake the Snake. And, of course, the classic commentary from Gorilla and the Brain. Steve Riddle, finally. This is a much better pay-per-view than it is given credit for. Shawn Michaels puts on a good match with Santana. Taker squashes Roberts to end the first part of the WWF tenure and goes 2-0. Piper and Hart put on a clinic that many didn't expect. Savage Flair is excellent. Macho Man gets one last taste of glory. Hogan Sid is decent, but is best remembered for Warrior's return, though I think the show should have ended with Savage and Liz celebrating instead of Hogan posing. Overall, this ranks up with WrestleMania 19 as the most underrated WrestleMania in history.
All right. So thank you all for your feedback, as always.
Yes.
And we are going to go ahead and wrap things up. We hope you enjoyed our trek through WrestleMania 8.
Yep.
And that's it. I guess the question from here is, will Hulk Hogan stay or go? Will he be back? Will he go away forever? We'll find out in our next Vintage Vault. But we will be back on, I believe, Monday night. We're going to hit up the headlines. We'll hit up the wrestling news and also give you our Week 1 NFL predictions. And then later in the week, next week, we'll be hitting up SummerSlam 1992 Vintage Vault. So be sure to get into the Pick'em League. That'll be on the Place to Be message board, bigelow34proboards.com. And also, we have a fantasy league on there as well. Scott, you need to get in on that.
I signed up
tonight. So you can find the link to that on the Facebook page, also on the message board. So, of course, hit us up on Facebook, on the message board, or at Twitter at Place2BPodcast, number two. And I think that's it. I think we're good. So for Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We will talk to you next week.
Have a good week. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?